The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Very good morning to you on this Friday. Adrian with you and Owen as ever. Good morning to you, Owen. How are you getting on?
Very well, Adrian. How are you?
I'm all right. Were you under the bed sheets last night about half five? Just to make sure that you were free of any trick-or-treaters or get frightened by those nasty fireworks or anything like that.
You read my mind. That's exactly what happened, yeah.
Was it?
No, kind of. We're kind of potting around, but certainly didn't engage in the Halloween festivities last night.
Yesterday, your Halloween's not for you.
Not since I was of an age to go trick-or-treating, no.
But you're very anti. Was the thing that served me yesterday, it wasn't like a casual sort of, I could give or take Halloween. It was like, I really hate Halloween.
It's more to do with the firework craze that goes on. I mean, it's just, doesn't make sense to me, to be honest.
People like to look at loud... a beautiful coloured loud.
But it's not beautiful coloured. That's the exact point I was making yesterday. We're in danger of repeating ourselves here. But the colourful nature of professional firework displays, I love. The amateur aural pleasure that people get from fireworks just doesn't make sense to me.
You're a sort of fellow that he'll only go to a Premier League game. Not interested in Carabao Cup.
I'm very interested in the Carabao Cup after this week, actually. Yeah. So maybe I should have actually gone out and broadened my horizons and seen the teenagers down the street setting off black cats or whatever the names of the fireworks are.
I'm surprised at your intolerance of Halloween, I have to say. It surprised me when I listened to you during the week. I was out and about last night for a while. It was cracking fun.
Was that a pun?
Not really.
So what do you get? Talk me through the hall.
The hall is much and many, I have to say. It was like all sorts of the usual kind of refreshers.
M&M's. M&M's is a good addition
jellies.
To any trick-or-treater bag.
The best additions I find that I'm eating a lot of like those sweets that we would have eaten in the 80s, like the refreshers, stingers. It's like a hard fizzy sweet.
Yeah.
A lot of them. Love hearts. What else? A lot of jellies, fizzy cola bottles. So this is the first year that we've had the opportunity to go trick-or-treating with the kids. And so I'd obviously been doing it, like you say, since I was like whatever age it is that you give it up as a kid. But there was all
21
like...
21 or so.
Huh?
21.
Yeah, about there. So there would have been like, when I was a kid, there would like monkey nuts and fruit. You would have got a lot of monkey nuts and a lot of fruit. Neither.
Not a single one.
At any point.
Kids these days, they get away with everything. Was there anything else other than the kind of... hard, sticky sweets, but like I was there.
Chocolate.
Bit of chocolate? What kind of chocolate?
Like Maltesers, M&M's.
That's okay. Yeah. That. Any crisps?
You wouldn't get any crisps, no.
No.
Just too big, I think.
Times have changed.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to lie, it's a disappointing haul, Adrian.
No, it was a good haul. I got stuck into it last night. See, the young fella's like, he's not even three yet. So a lot of it will be lost on him.
What did he go as?
He dressed up as an incredibly scary aeroplane. Yeah, the Biggles helmet. Do you remember Biggles, the book? The pilot guy was like, do you remember Biggles?
No.
Tommy's making faces as well, so he might take out a photograph and put Biggles up there. But was this pilot. It was like sort of probably 70s, 80s book about this airline. I haven't really read the books, but I'm familiar with the name and all that jazz. But he would wear this like brown sort of cap hat.
Yeah,
thing,
I know the sort of hat. Yeah, yeah. Like Dastardly and Muttley.
That sort of thing. And so he dressed up as that, yeah. And he had an airplane on.
That's a great great costume. What did you go as?
I had a very scary Dickie bow.
Right.
Yeah. And a Frankenstein half mask.
Half as in like...
Just that. No, like this half that way. Okay. So you wouldn't... What did you dress up as when you... What used you dress up as a kid?
Very generic sort of vampires. I went as Ron Weasley 1 year as a kid.
Right.
Which is a very easy fix. Just a cape and a stick, basically, and I was a magician. Wizard, actually.
When I was a kid, the plastic masks. Were the plastic masks still in vogue when you were young fella?
Yeah.
Or were they gone?
Yeah, but they're uncomfortable, like.
So they were uncomfortable as all hell. The elastic band would frequently snap and, like, almost take your eye out or, like, some sort of a laceration at some point or another.
Right.
And also the heat inside them. Like, your breath, the mouth hole was, like, this tiny little thing that you couldn't possibly... And also it's freezing cold outside. So all the condensation builds up on the inside. Your face will be on fire by the end of it. Things have moved on happily.
And when you're in the Halloween shop last week, kind of sitting there sifting through, why is it Frankenstein that you're like, that's me.
You say last week, I went to Deals or some version of Deals yesterday on the way home.
Right, okay. That's what and happened. Then when you're in Deals,
literally, there was three options. One was some sort of a purple scary mask. The other one didn't even look like a Halloween mask. Mm. And then there was that one. And I thought, well, that's...
It spoke to you a bit more.
It's probably going to fit around my head. So I'm going to... if you want to say it spoke to me more, let's run with that. My main thought was it's probably going to fit around my head, so let's go with that.
And were you... did he terrify some people?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah. My wife. It was great fun. And I'm astonished at your lack of engagement with it on, but you're looking, there we go. If anybody has any great Halloween stories from last night, do feel free to get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Jim Gavin, it looks as if his, one of the main stories in the newspapers this morning is going to stay on. The Dublin chairman, Sean Shanley, has been giving a couple of quotes to some of the reporters about the likelihood that, you know, certainly, well, he's not saying he's actually staying on, but he's saying as well, he's been busy planning for next year. That would seem... to indicate that he is staying on. The more surprising thing at this point in the year, given all the stick that like Clare have got over the hurling manager there, and Brian Lowen was appointed there last night, and Galway obviously the same, with it being now November and having no manager-ish, certainly in Clare's instance, in place. Like, the more surprising thing out the back of all that would be that if Jim Gavin had let it go this long without saying, listen, I'm not going to be around, and give Dublin that time to appoint the new person.
And that is why we don't even need to see the story
to
know that he's definitely staying on. He realises, as much as anybody else around the country, what it takes in terms of preparation for the following year, that now is where your prep needs to start. Probably needed to start as soon as the All-Ireland finished, if there was a new manager coming in. And I know Jim Gavin isn't somebody to get carried away with anything outside of the current season, but if he was going to get succeeded by somebody next season, he would have been making calls, I would imagine, in the weeks immediately after the All-Ireland. This would be way too late for somebody like Jim Gavin to walk away, unless really there is a side to him that we've never seen before, which is like, I don't want my successor to have any success whatsoever, which is definitely not the man he is. So I could see no logic to this. Like, there really would be no sense now in him stepping away unless something extraordinary happens. So he's around next year, like, inquiring about fixtures, as Sean Shanley said. He's going to be back around. And really, that's... It's kind of a dagger through the heart for a lot of people who might have wanted Dublin to not win the All-Ireland next year.
A dagger through the heart for a lot of people. I mean, for you.
I think that as long as Jim Gavin is manager of a football team, that football team would always be in with a shout of winning the All-Irelands. You put in place that as well, the best collection of players that the country has to offer as well. And really, they're without question, the most impressive team in the country and red hot favourites for next season. But I do place a lot of importance on Jim Gavin's role. I know we don't get much, but he does seem unlike anybody else we've ever seen in the GEA in terms of his dedication to the cause, in terms of the professionalism he's brought. And even from, you know, the osmosis that would now allow Jason Sherlock to become a great inter-county manager, I'm sure of it one day. Like, I'm not sure will anybody ever get to the level of Jim Gavin. I'm just convinced it has to drop down a peg or two in terms of the standards once he leaves. And that doesn't mean they're not going to be the best team in the country when he leaves. They probably still will be if he leaves in the next couple of seasons. But the utter dominance over everybody else, the ruthlessness with which they show that the Leinster Football Championship, for example, I wonder, will that still be dialed up to the level it is when he walks away? I maintain that Jim Gavin and Stephen Cluxton are still the two most important cogs in Dublin GEA.
Yeah, and we don't know about Cluxton obviously yet as well. It's an interesting one. You do think that there's some sort of a template that's been delivered that, you know, in terms of like, if you look at the Leinster one as an example, like, taking the foot off the gas in Leinster is not something that's going to be accepted in, like, part of the legacy of his thing whenever he leaves will be that they take Leinster very seriously and they obliterate teams at every possible opportunity. So you assume that there are a load of legacy aspects, but the certainty that comes with him still being there is like a huge thing, I think, for Dublin over the next whatever number of years. He's got, I think, 2 years still to run, so whatever he does beyond this year, we'll see. But the certainty that comes with having him there, like, I'm saying that deliberately because you're not 100% sure. There's uncertainty necessarily if it is Desi Farrell or Jason Sherlock or whoever it is that comes in. I'm sure there are other options that comes in after him, but it's the certainty of Jim Gavin being there. There isn't, like, reading the Brian Lowen story this morning, he still hasn't appointed there's no strength and conditioning coach appointed, for example. Like, that's the stuff that people talk about, like, why you need to get the appointment done early. It's to get all that stuff done and to get your team in place, like, because that stuff is... not easily fixed. So the certainty, I suppose, that comes with him being there. But I'm sure there will be... The proof will only be in the pudding, right, at the back end of whenever he does leave. And there'll be other factors, like the Cluxton factor, whether he stays or goes. And I'm sure some other players at that point as well. But certainly in terms of the manager thing, the certainty of having him around is strikes fear clearly into the heart of Kerry people all over the place.
I just think that once he steps away, people will see an opportunity. I don't mean to frame it as in, oh, this is bad news for everybody else, because I think he's a fantastic manager. And I think... What time will judge what he's done even better than how we viewed it at the time. Once the full story's come out, hopefully the full story's come out and we realise why exactly he's gone in to put this five in a row together, I think he'll come across as an even more impressive man. So I don't mean to be negative like that. I mean, when he departs, actually, there will be a spring in the step of when he leaves.
Back away from it. It's totally fine, 100%. Everybody understands why you're being negative. It's about an hour now from the most exciting thing this morning that's going to happen.
This morning or this month or this year?
Well, maybe all of those things. The Off the Ball Stars, third annual Off the Ball Stars. I mean, the Rugby World Cup third place thing is happening as well, but let's not worry about that. Are about to drop on in the next while. What's happening?
Well, I don't think people need an explainer for what the Off the Ball Stars are. They are the most prestigious set of awards that one GAA player or one GAA organisation or one GAA moment can possibly win. So obviously, we've been kind of screwed over here. There's been a couple of spin-offs. There's a spin-off happening in the Convention Centre tonight.
Off
the Ball Stars, PWC, GAA, GPA All Stars, I think.
We are
the original, we are the OG. No expense spared. They are our golden envelopes for our winners tonight. Some of the awards in our ceremony later on after 9 o'clock this morning include Hurling Game of the Year, Football Game of the Year. We got footballer and hurler as well.
They're the
basic ones, but the big ones this year are Rejection of the Year. We've got International Moment of the Year, and we've got Unlikely Rivalry of the Year. We won't reveal the contenders for those categories just yet, but you can probably imagine who's in the Hurling Game of the Year and the Football Game of the Year.
Yeah, and if people have any ideas about what they think should go into those categories, if they want to come up with new categories, we'll take whatever's going, because they really are sort of bendy. We can do what we want with them.
Well, I would say that we're listeners here in the Off the Ball Stars. We're not kind of a stonecutters organisation. So
not like the other spin-off one that they've got a set format, they've got to stick to it, they've got to run it out in an hour or whatever it is. We can do whatever the hell pleases us.
Really grinds my gears when somebody has a good idea, somebody goes along and just steals it.
Yeah, shocking. Right, here's what's coming up between now and 9:30 for you this morning. We're going to get stuck into the sports pages and let you know exactly what's happening there in the next couple of moments. The football is coming your way at about 8:05. I don't know who we're chatting to about the football just yet, but we will be bringing you some football conversation later in the show. That I can definitely guarantee you. We're going to talk to a Donegal GAA doctor who's involved with Niamh Connell, who obviously eventually progressed out of the Dublin Senior Football Championship at the weekend after a second replay against Gweedore in Donegal, I should say. And they are going to... that doctor is an advocate for player welfare and thinks that having played on the Wednesday and then the following Sunday, having played all the previous weeks as well, is just a spridge too far for these players. So he'll come and explain all that to us a little bit later in the show. We're going to talk to you about those Off the Ball Stars at about 8:20. Andy Dunn is in the house to preview the Menly, obviously the World Cup final, tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock start. And also, if we can ring a little bit more chat out of the state of Irish rugby, we'll probably do that as well. And obviously the bronze medal game is on at 9 this morning, so we might touch on that too. We've got a very special crappy quiz edition coming your way after 9, and Phil Egan will be along with us as well after 9:20 to talk to us about everything that's happening in the world of live sport. It's almost 7:45 on this Friday morning. You're watching O2BAM, the sports breakfast show from Off the Ball. We're delighted to have you along with us, and we'd love to hear from you this morning. So whatever platform it is that you're watching or listening to us on this morning, do keep your comments coming in. But right now, time for the papers. Going to kick things off here with the Herald for you this morning. Sixth Sense writes Frank Roach here. Massive boost for Dubs as Gavin targets another title. It's be his eighth year in charge of Dublin. And as Frank Roach writes, he's going for his sixth title there. An All-Ireland League hit by major setback, writes Don McDonald here. This is the news that the IFA have decided that they don't want to be involved with this proposed Kieran Lucid proposal that there should be an All-Ireland League. I'm not sure that's going to be the end of it, but that's the story from Dan McDonald there this morning.
Yeah, it's been shot down pretty quickly there from the north. Back page of the Sun this morning is the Keogh must go on, Richard to fight it. Derby County captain ready to wage war on his club. And Hate Mob said, this is in relation to Granit Xhaka, we wish your daughter gets cancer, we'll kill your wife. Horrendous stuff coming out around the Granit Xhaka situation here. Obviously had a bit of sympathy for him at the weekend, given how he's been treated by the Arsenal fans, but obviously this stuff is horrific altogether, and he's come out over the last day or so to reveal it. And like, Granit Xhaka has been criticised over the last couple of days for not coming out with an apology to the Arsenal supporters after what he did on Sunday. Mm. And if that's the stuff you're getting, but granted it's only a section of Arsenal fans, yeah, but like you are apologising to the whole cohort of supporters when you come out, like, why would you say sorry to that section of people, even though there's a tiny minority of people who've given you that sort of abuse, is what I think. I know people are on the other side of things and saying he should have come out and said sorry anyway. I have a huge degree of sympathy for Granit Xhaka here. I think he's been treated terribly by Arsenal supporters because they don't think he's a good footballer. They don't think he's a great footballer. Yeah. And they're probably right. I think as a footballer, like, I don't think sometimes he should be starting for the Arsenal team. But I think it's a very different situation to actually getting up and jeering your captain as he's coming.
It's piss poor. Let's face it. Like, that's the reality of it. And like, it doesn't always need to be an apology as a thing. Like, a statement with some context is totally fine. And that suddenly makes everybody, Arsenal fans, go, right, well, actually, we sort of understand now what's going on. And actually, when they're at the ground the next time and there's some asshole saying things like it was been said there, was that stuff online, or was it pretty horrific stuff that was been said? I don't know if it was online or
it was online.
So like, it does make fans also then culturally turn against that type of commentary, you would hope. But there are obviously the two things at play. One, like, it's okay to say that he's not a great footballer and as a paying punter express that point of view, but like, you're sort of stepping over the line in a massive way by coming up with some of the stuff that's been said about him. It's horrific abuse, really. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: Taylor calls for crackdown on boxing dopers. Let's get serious, says Katie Taylor. Says there's no room in the sport, given its nature, for fighters to be doped up to the gills. This is Mark Gallagher, who's reporting from Manchester ahead of Katie's fight at the weekend against the WBO super lightweight champion Christina Linard Dadao. Am I right with that pronunciation?
Yeah, that sounds
about right, doesn't it? So that fight's taking place tomorrow night, and obviously she doesn't have any belts on the line because it's a different weight class for her. She moves super lightweight. That's Katie Taylor. And All Ireland League on the rocks as IFA reject plan is the other story there from Philip Quinn.
The back page of the Mirror this morning is: double Klopp, Reds boss may have to field two teams on the same night to avoid cup chaos. So Jurgen Klopp split his Liverpool squad so different teams could play in the FIFA Club World Cup and EFL Cup on the same night. And you've also got that Fall Island League. That's the headline on the story regarding the IFA shooting down Lucid's plan for a joint venture. And Lohan in at Clare, says Pat Nolan.
Coming for Carribee home on the front page of the Examiner this morning: Lenehan and O'Gara, England's time is now. That's very much the narrative across anywhere and anyone you speak to, that England are going to get the job done. We'll hear from Andy Dunn a bit later on that. And plenty of coverage inside, including that news on Brian Lowen. And we were just chatting there about the social media abuse that was dished out to Granit Xhaka. I hadn't fully appreciated before reading Owen Cormacan's article here on page 11 of the Examiner this morning the level of abuse that was aimed at the Clare County Board about their delay in appointing a hurling manager. It seems like the vast majority of this article and the vast majority of the County Board meeting, which convened last night to rubber stamp Brian Lowen's appointment, was focused on the fact that there was so much online abuse about the delay. And you know, I don't know, sometimes it gets muddied, the water gets muddied with, like, it's the idea that the county board should engage with the fact that why it took them that long and put some sort of processes or structures in place to ensure that, I suppose, whenever it crops up again inevitably over the next few years, that they're in a better position to make that appointment. But the quote here, it was like it was a your job now type speech from Christy Murray from Six Mile Bridge, who urged all clubs to row in behind the new manager, Brian Lohan. Now, there wasn't 100 applicants, so let's get behind them and try and get Clare back to the top. I.e., there was literally nobody else, and we hope he does a great job of it.
It's, you kind of have to feel a little bit for Brian Lohan after that kind of statement comes out as well. If it's taken this long to a point, there might have been a situation where he kind of felt a duty to the county as well, and revealing that there wasn't exactly 100 all other candidates to come in.
It's a euphemism for there was nobody else.
But yeah, exactly. So you do kind of feel for him straight away, and he is coming in a very tough position. This delay does not reflect well on Clare, and clearly they've got a bit of abuse online for that as well.
Yeah, he does have some staff in place, but not all. I should mention as well, the page 14 of the Examiner, Liam Mackey writes about the Kieran Lucid situation and the Irish Football Association thing, that they don't really want any part in it. There's a follow-up here in Liam Mackey's article, and where he says there was an email to the League of Ireland clubs last night. Lucid added more details on the status of this proposed venture. He said two broadcasters had expressed a genuine interest in covering the new league, along with countless positive discussions with commercial and political figures. He added, "We've not asked the clubs to commit to a league or format, simply to explore the feasibility, appetite and potential of cross-border competition in conjunction with Hypercube," I'm assuming some of these events organisers. The main takeaway there is that he's, despite the clubs that are under the auspices of the Irish Football Association saying we're not interested, he's saying, still on, which is kind of interesting. But I mean, I guess he's got to fight for it, and maybe it emerges in some other guise that doesn't involve the clubs unless it's a sweeten the deal thing from the Irish FA.
Were you surprised to see the story yesterday?
That they had said no.
Yeah.
Astonished. Like, why would you not, like he says himself almost, why would you not tease it out a bit more? Like, why would you, I don't know, unless they had said, listen, here's our tipping point. It'll be a financial conversation, right? It'll be a, here's our tipping point, here's the sort of funds we would need to make this thing happen. Like, it won't be about the Satanta Cup final shouldn't have been played in Cork, it should have been in Dublin, or it should have been in Newry, or whatever, wherever it should have been. It'll be a financial conversation, really. And, yeah, so for that reason, is that what you're getting at, that I think that...
Well, I don't know, I think...
A bit more.
When we were having these conversations, when Kieran Lucid first came up with this plan and we were having conversations about it, it's like, is this a good thing or a bad thing for the League of Ireland? Actually, no, it's a good thing. Yeah, grand, let's press on with it. Oh, wait, there's actually another party here that we completely forgot to think about, that just because it made sense for the League of Ireland doesn't necessarily mean that this whole thing is all hunky-dory. There was another party here that we completely forgot about. It never even crossed my mind that the IFA might actually come in and say, nah. And I guess that's perhaps the way we look on the Northern Irish League as people down here. Or maybe it's just me.
You were saying they're so shit that they should just get on board.
Well, I thought that, personally, I think the League of Ireland's in a better place, just about. I think they're on a close enough playing field. But I think that if the League of Ireland were willing to sacrifice the European places, then I thought that those in Northern Ireland might have done the same as well. But I was wrong, and we were all wrong. Clearly, there's a very different view in and around the Irish League. So
I know that the organisers had been in long conversations. Like, that's not a recent thing that they were involved in conversations with them. So, but I mean, yeah. Well, you wouldn't just see it out for a while more. Like, wait, what's the rush to say no?
Yeah. Well, like, I guess it's not. Maybe this is all part of a PR play as well.
Yeah.
That maybe they're not getting what they want at the moment from Lucid, or maybe that there is a bit of negotiation going on. Go to the press, say it's a hard no.
Sweeten it up a bit.
Yeah, and that's what's going to happen. I'd say that's how these things work. Back page of the Irish Daily Star is "Sick Abuse Sent Me Over the Edge." That's Granit Xhaka saying "Boo Boys made him lose the plot." Irish Stars slam Derby meanwhile. That's Jeff Hendrick and Harry Arter rallying in support of Ireland teammate Richard Keogh. Klopp may split squad. That story there about the Club World Cup and the EFL Cup clashing, and Lohan named boss in the banner.
The Irish Independent this morning, Dublin Eye, 6 in a row, writes that story from Frank Roach there again. A nice shot there of Katie ahead of her bout this weekend. Lucid group to push ahead with All-Ireland League despite major setback, writes Dan McDonnell, and former Pearshig boss O'Neill now leading the Galway race. This is the latest development, writes Jonathan Higgins here at the back page of the Independent. Yeah, the latest development from Galway, that former Pearshig manager Shane O'Neill is the front runner now to take charge there. That really is turning into a saga.
The Irish Times this morning leads with the rugby. It will be physical, but England looked perfectly primed, says Gerry Thornley in Tokyo. And the eyes have it. England vision coach Calder closing in on unique prize. So this is Cheryl Calder, who's been written about quite a bit during Eddie Jones' tenure as England head coach. She's got a vast array of experience, and you can see her there coaching Lakovinopola in terms of his peripheral vision, I want to say. You know, I don't know too much of the science of what she exactly does, but I know that she is a vision coach and has worked in Formula One before and has worked in roles in rugby and football, I think, as well.
She was previously. She was in the Clive Woodward setup in 2003. She was with South Africa in 2007. She'd worked with Ernie Els, some F1 drivers, like a long track record of, and like 15 to 20 years ago, it was seen as a bit hocus pocus. It was like, well, this is highfalutin stuff that actually doesn't really mean anything. But clearly, what happens obviously in these instances is whether it's making a difference or not, somebody sees that somebody's working with a winning team and they go, well, we must have some of that. And I mean, maybe there's a placebo impact of that either way. I have no idea. We'll see. When they win the World Cup, we'll be like first in the queue for a vision, something, something. The London Times back page for you this morning. We can inspire a whole country. There's rugby fever going on. Mums are telling kids to play. It changes how people feel. Eddie Jones on the eve of England against South Africa. Do you buy that?
Not necessarily. Maybe in England it'll have a huge impact if they win tomorrow morning. Like, you saw those figures about New Zealand's participation rates falling through the floor.
Have they? Right?
Significantly. Is it 16% in the last World Cup cycle, people going to soccer? Wow. And it's fairly obvious why that is. It's because parents are concerned about their children's welfare. Now, World Rugby are obviously trying to hit back with lower tackle heights and all that sort of thing, which is vital not only for the health of the player, but the knock-on impact of that is the participation rates. And I just think that that is the epidemic that rugby faces, is that if you're a parent and you want your child to be safe, there is reason to say, I don't want my kid playing rugby. So I always have caution about the idea that rugby can go to a whole new level in its current guise. But I know World Rugby are doing their best to try and, as I say, reduce tackle heights and try and make it a bit of a safer game, because that way parents will trust it again. And this sort of bounce that you might get from winning a World Cup might actually have a real impact.
I thought that fair points, the impact of high sporting achievement had been, the idea of legacy had been sort of, we'd put a bullet in that post London 2012 that actually it's not really a thing. You're going to get loads of outlier examples of kids who are growing up who are going, I remember watching Johnny May in that the 2019 World Cup and he inspired me to go on to do this thing. You're going to have loads of that, but it's incidental. It's not necessarily the plan, that like the impact mums are telling kids to play. I mean, are they? Watching the World Cup and England are flying it, you should go and play rugby. Like, as somebody with kids, I wouldn't be thinking, Jesus, great, Ireland to win the World Cup. Come on, let's get a rugby ball. And like, that's the Wimbledon factor. Like, it lasts for a week or two, but there's no great legacy to it.
Unless there is the sort of pushy parents element to it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my child has a chance of being the best in the world.
And you get swayed by, you as a Tiger parent get swayed by, like, I don't know, Andy Murray is, like, doing really well at Wimbledon, and you're like, okay, now you're going to become a tennis player. Or, like, Lewis Hamilton has been in the Formula One, let's get the go-karts out. I mean, I don't know. You're going to be a Tiger parent either way, is what I'm saying.
They just have too much success in Britain, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I've used a lot of English examples there, haven't I? That's fair. British.
Back page of The Guardian this morning is the Rugby World Cup final, naturally. England can inspire a nation by winning a World Cup, says Eddie Jones. I feel rejected, or felt rejected. Meanwhile, says Captain Xhaka, Arsenal fans' abuse caused that reaction, and fighting back, West Ham's Kenza Daly on a life of tragedy and triumph.
And we leave certainly what I think is the best from an English point of view from page of a sports section to last here. This is the Telegraph this morning. Rugby World Cup final, England against South Africa at Yokohama Stadium. That is one class animation.
It's great. Yeah, it's savage. Like, yeah, it is. It's
go on. Well,
no, I was just saying. I didn't realise it was the William Webb Ellis Trophy he actually had there for a second.
I looked at it last night and it was the same thing. It took me a second to realise, but it's beautiful. That's
must be a sturdy old trophy.
You're putting a
bicep smash to the grass.
We do have one last one for you, the Irish News this morning. Lucid not put off by IFA rejection. That's it. That's the newspaper for you this morning. It's nearly 8 o'clock.
You got to applaud his attitude to all of this.
Kieran Lucid.
Yeah, getting rejected and saying,
look, at the same time, right, when you actually think of it logically, as we were discussing earlier on, he'd be some weak businessman if they'd issued that statement and he'd gone, right, lads, call off the hounds, it's all done. Like, that wouldn't have shown much belly for the battle.
No, maybe there is kind of a distaste for this being a stepping stone, perhaps, in the north, about could this perhaps lead to an all-Ireland team, as was obviously kind of floated decades ago. To be fair, I think there was opposition to that in Dublin as well, so not pointing fingers there. But like, maybe there is a lot of mistrust from Lucid, towards Lucid, because there might be a view that this is part of a stepping stone towards greater unity, and the IFA obviously wants to keep their power. Yeah. And to be fair, the FAI probably want to keep their power as well, and they want to have two separate football organisations. Complete speculation on my part here.
It seems like the FAI are behind it somewhat, from everything you read.
Like that was the point I was making earlier, is that once the sounds down here started to get positive, it was like, well, that's it now.
All right, they should have said, no, it doesn't make any sense, and that would have, like, a flash.
That's an interesting theory.
A bit of a double bluff. But, I mean, there's ultimately, they...
it's a great word. It's very handy. You can connect any clauses you
really
want with
can,
that word.
You really can. They... I'm totally drawn off my point now there with that excellent gag. The IFA... I think like what they would need convincing about is the competitiveness of it, right? So that you would say, probably part of their concern is, if we were to just launch headlong into this thing now, like the evidence over the last number of years has been that your guys are going to get the better of our guys. And we don't want to knowingly buy into a system that, give or take a couple of outliers, your team is going to be beating our team. So we need to have some sort of assurances about equity of finance. I suppose that's probably the major thing. Like that's the thing that at some point when it all starts to level out competitively in whatever it would take 3 or 4 years in terms of the quality of teams, and I'm sure there'd be like more movement of players as well, like there'd be far more players moving between leagues, you would think, that's probably the sort of assurances, that's the thing that they probably need to buy into more than anything.
Yeah,
outside of having the financial guarantees that actually there's some, because like fans are going to lose interest pretty quickly if what ultimately happens every year is that the League of Ireland teams are kicking the shit out of the Irish FA teams.
I don't think anybody thinks that that's a realistic possibility from the off. Like, I don't think the golfing class is...
It's not a golf, but the main body of evidence has been that the teams down here are better than the teams up there.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that was kind of my way of looking at it, is that perhaps we thought that because of that, they would just follow suit, but actually it's probably the opposite of that. It has the complete opposite reaction because there are European slots up for grabs, and perhaps then if you collate that all into one league... If you accept that the League of Ireland is in a much better place than the Irish League, then you're basically sacrificing all your European spots, yeah, and teams in the South get them all. Whereas our logic down here is that we might lose one European place, two European places,
so what, like,
but yeah, at least it is promising a lot more money, so yeah, and we'd still have a couple of teams going to Europe.
All right, 2 minutes past eight on this Friday morning. It's OTB AM. Plenty coming up over the next hour. Andy Dunn, the off-the-ball stars. We'll have football as well ahead of a pretty excellent weekend of Premier League ahead, it has to be said. Remember that as well, that if you miss anything from OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off The Ball, you can catch it all back in our podcast. You'll find it on the Go Loud app, Spotify, iTunes, and on offtheball.com as well. So head along there and check it out. It's timestamp free as well for handiness, so you can just click through to whatever it is you want to go to. We're back after these.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Okay, well, the main focus this week has been on England's V-shape while facing the Haka, and for encroaching over the halfway line, they inexplicably get fined by Royal Rugby £2,500. I mean, what's going on here? Hello?
I know. I mean, what is going on here? You'd have to say this reeks of some kind of conspiracy theory, or at the very least, hypocrisy. I mean, the All Blacks are allowed to perform a kind of Maori war dance, threatening to rip their opponents' heads off.
Rip off their heads and shit in the hole, I believe, are the lyrics.
Well, we don't know they're the exact words. I mean, we can't 100% verify that they're the exact lyrics.
Okay, fair enough. But how are you supposed to react when a bunch of crazy men with bulging eyes and tongues hanging out are shouting at you and threatening you in some kind of unintelligible rant?
Well, I suppose you could ask the same question of anyone coming out of Copperface Jacks on a Saturday night.
Okay, Ronan O'Gara joins us live from the Jacks, as usual, in France. Ronan, South Africa sort of promised a big physical battle against England. They kind of bullied Wales in the semi-final. Are they going to do the same again against England?
That's a good question, sure. Can they do the same? I don't know, to be honest. They might, and then again, they might not. I suppose that's the thing about rugby, you just don't know.
Indeed you don't. Just like anything that actually hasn't happened yet, it's hard to know. But I was hoping you might be able to, I don't know, shed some light on the subject, maybe?
I think England will have to accumulate points at this level. They know that, so, you know, they'll have to accumulate points. early on if they want to
win.
Exactly.
Sure. Okay, well, Will Greenwood has, of course, won the World Cup with England in 2003. It's 16 years ago, so I can count. And Will joins us now live. Will, what sort of mindset do you think England would adopt when facing the All Blacks on Saturday? Will it be all-out attrition, or will it be a bit more to it than that?
Biggest game of their lives ever. Bish, bash, bosh, smash, grab up the middle, clear out, boom, bomb, bombard, absolutely clinical, fire in the belly, ice in the veins, key battles in the tight five, two mammoth packs, toe-to-toe, stuck in from the off, all or nothing, no holds barred, gain line, hard yards, line out, crucial, in, out, up, down, around and about, all day long, scrums, absolutely, back row, breakdown, vital, impact, contact, halfbacks, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, vital, bring it on, space, vision, man or two along it, absolutely vital, more vital than anyone or anything, anywhere, ever.
Okay. 53106 is X number. If anyone has a clue what Will Greenwood was talking about, I certainly don't. Yeah, you could be in with a chance to win something in association with something, although let's face it, that's highly unlikely. I think he said that England were going to win, but I can't be sure.
I think there's a fundamental flaw in a sport that sort of makes you want the Springboks to come first. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's hard to care. Gotta say, I'm kind of sick of this World Cup rugby bullshit. I can't wait to get stuck into some proper analysis, like analysing something with merit, something with real soul, like, I don't know, Birmingham Derby. Birmingham versus Aston Villa. That would be my dream. In the meantime, I'll say goodnight.
Go, Baka. Baka me backside. Sick of it.
Richard's rugger thing.
On Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
To be fair, it's pretty good.
It's outstanding. It's, it's...
What's your favourite bit?
Well, his Greenwood is absolutely spot on. Like, I know we're here for the laughs and all that, but as a pure art form, in terms of an impression, his Will Greenwood, there's a lot of them that if you listen to without watching them, you actually might get confused, but that Greenwood, indecipherable. Of course, when he's saying pish bash off the middle, he realises it's not Will
Reading
Greenwood.
Reading off a lot of numbers one after another.
Fantastic.
Is that shirt, do you have that shirt?
No.
First, when it flashed up, I thought, there's the own shirt.
Well, the thing is, I never button my shirt up to the top. That's a very Gilroy thing. I haven't done that since I was about 17, maybe.
Sheehan lashes back at Cooper.
Yeah, the wardrobe department for Richard's rugger thing need to have a long, hard look at themselves in the mirror, to be quite honest.
It was like half two different types of shirt rolled into one.
Yeah, I only noticed that after you spotted
it. I don't know if he, like, go to the zip and get it made up, or was that something you could actually buy?
I'd say it's something you could actually buy. Looking. It looks like he pulled it out of his
something
wardrobe.
Something like you'd wear. Like, actually.
You got there in the end of the punchline. But that's I don't know. I'm quite comfortable in my own shirt choice, Adrian. Thank you very much.
Fair enough. I mean, I was going to say I can't fault you, but...
You really can?
Not great.
I don't claim to be a fashionista, so it's okay.
Are you coping all right with it?
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's what I find funny is people who then do Richard's impression to me. It's like, Richard's impression is the funny thing here. You don't realise that. He is... His delivery is what makes it funny. But you politely laugh anyway when they do it.
Well, no, I was about to make the point that I was on the way into work yesterday and I was in the car with my wife and we were tipping along and she wouldn't be somebody that's used to listening to Off the Ball in any of its guises, so wouldn't be overly familiar with many of the characters involved, but we were listening to yourself and Jers over and back about this exact topic, obviously pre the latest instalment, and my wife made the observation, geez, Owen's actually kind of funny.
Oh, thank you very much. She's obviously got a fantastic sense of humour.
Gave her a quizzical look. Well, she's married to me, so I suppose that's says everything you need to know about her sense of humour.
I am the perfect antidote to Adrian Murray.
Right, loads more to come. We're going to get stuck into the rugby in just a few minutes' time. It's obviously under an hour now out from the bronze medal final, is that what it's called, between New Zealand and Wales.
I definitely remember that was happening.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely, yeah. You definitely haven't just reminded me.
I just saw a quote there from Warren Gatland actually in the last few minutes to say that it's, I think it's 66 years since Wales last beat the All Blacks. Like, oh, this game really matters. The World Rugby have actually released their World Player of the Year nominations in the last few minutes as well. And as I scroll here to look for them, they have Alwyn Jones, Cheslin Kolbe, Ardy Cervea, Tom Curry is on the list. And
it's Peter Seth de Troyes, Alwyn Jones, Cheslin Kolbe, Ardy Cervea.
Geoff Tafiti from the US.
Yes, and Tom Curry, as you mentioned.
So, yeah, no Owen Farrell on there.
No Japanese player.
No Japanese player is a bit bizarre, isn't it?
Matsushima, potentially going after the try record in the tournament. Itoje. That was unbelievable. Itoje.
Bizarre.
Yeah, that's a... They're big omissions,
like,
I think.
Also, why would you not hang on? These awards are on Sunday night, actually, aren't they? But also, hang on until the World Cup final is done, surely.
I think... I'm not, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think that the actual decision on who wins is based on it comes after Saturday. I think that'll happen after for the coach anyway. I don't know for a fact that'll happen after tomorrow's final.
But like, if Itoje goes out and has man of the match, for example, having had an unbelievable World Cup and is man of the match in a World Cup final, he's not on the shortlist.
Is there? There's no. Oh, there is. You've got Kolbe on the list, but like, I mean, he missed the last game. If you're picking a South African player of the tournament. Because he missed the last game, I'm not sure you're picking Kolbe. I would probably have Faf de Klerk as their player.
But I'm saying, like, from an English point of view, if everything goes according to script, Owen Farrell goes out and bosses the game around, having had a good World Cup up to now, Itoje having had a great World Cup, it doesn't make any sense. Leave it until after the World Cup final, surely. It's the showpiece.
Makes sense. Makes sense to me.
Right, we're turning our attention briefly to GAA for the next few minutes. We're getting back to the rugby in just a little bit. Andy Dunn is going to join us in studio to pick through the weekend's action and to have a little bit more reflection on Ireland as well. So do keep your thoughts on that coming into us. Dr. Charlie McManus joins us on the line. He was the Donegal team doctor under Jim McGuinness for 4 years from 2010. He's been leading the way and an advocate for player welfare in the GAA, and wrote a letter yesterday to Ulster Council which drew our attention. It requested that the Ulster Championship quarter-final between the Donegal champions Niamh Connell and Cavan's Castlerahan, which is due to take place on Sunday at Breffni Park, be postponed by a week to allow the Niamh Connell players proper time to recover. They won the Donegal title on Wednesday night, a one-point win, a second replay, one-point win over Gweedore after an epic trilogy in the space of 10 days, and due to play in Ulster on Sunday. Charlie, you obviously are very much of the view that this game should not go ahead.
Certainly. Good morning to everyone listening. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to discuss this briefly on your show. Certainly, I'm of the opinion this game should be postponed. It goes against everything I believe in to in any way be an advocate to allow this match take place 3.5 days after these boys have won, possibly for some of them, the most important game of their lives so far. We have to remember that to win a county championship is probably the pinnacle for most people's careers, and to not allow a team to acknowledge that and to ask them to represent their county in a provincial club championship 3.5 days later is wrong on so many levels. And that's why I felt the need to address this. Obviously, I had these concerns pre the game, but I think to anyway try and address it would may have come across as being unkind to Gweedore and give them the impression that I felt that Gweedore, that Niamh Connell were going to win. I think this is something we could only address after the final results. And as you said, this was a trilogy. This is a trilogy of epic proportions. I've never witnessed three games, a club or a county, of such high intensity, of such a physical battle, where both teams showed each other an incredible amount of respect and played football that drew an increased number of spectators per game. Like, the last game of the series had the most, had the largest attendance in Ballybuffet and had to be put back 10 or 15 minutes. When the boys came off the field eventually, when I was coming home, it was just about 2 degrees in the car. To allow this game go ahead without recovery time, and anyone who's involved in any sort of sports medicine will inform you that the big emphasis now is on recovery and rehab. These boys won't have time for either. By allowing this game to go ahead, it says We don't recognise you as the champions you are. We're going to pit you against another county champion team. Now, Castlerahan, I don't want to take away from Castlerahan. This is nothing to do with Castlerahan, and I wish them well in their game and everything. But this is solely about my interest in the boys that I have to somehow try and keep a handle on. And to ask me to, in my opinion, if I was asked this game would go ahead, I can only say it cannot go ahead. I'm asking for a simple 7-day turnaround to allow the boys to recover, to allow Martin and the management team to actually have a look at his players to assess what injuries they have, who's carrying which, that and the other. And the reason I do this is because I have a little bit of history with this sort of situation. You mentioned Jim. Like when I first came in with Jim, it was in 2010, and we got to the Ireland final in 21. I don't want to bring it back for a lot of the Donegal boys who were involved that day. I'm sure they still haven't even watched that game in replay. But the night before we left Dublin, I was driving around Donegal going to various clubs trying to find out what players were and weren't available. We arrived in Dublin with half of them suffering from a significant upper respiratory stroke viral infection that wiped them out. They had absolutely zero energy. Michael O'Donnell during the week gave a talk that he remembers Jim telling about halftime in that game, Anton McFadden, who would have been a very attacking halfback for us back at that time, had to come off before halftime. He was shivering in the corner. And I'm standing there as a team doctor, and I should have just cancelled that game on health grounds. That night, we got back to Donegal town, and the late Pat Shelton was with me. And I remember I looked at him in the dressing room after the game, and he was the colour of the wall. And we got back to Donegal town. Instead of letting him go up to the town, the team, I stuck him in my car, and I drove him there to County Hospital, and he was admitted for a week. I also have kind of history with when Declan Bowner in his last year was under 21 team.
Yeah.
You know, they won the Ulster. I think there was a replay involved. They became Ulster champions. I can only ever dream of being a club county champion, but to win your provincial championship at any level and then to ask those boys to turn around 6 days later and meet the might of Dublin, it was totally wrong and should not be allowed to happen.
Charlie,
here we have a situation where teams who have played 3 games, including extra time, are asked to not to actually acknowledge what they've achieved, to return and go out again solely to fill a fixture.
Can I just interrupt there for a sec, Charlie, just to get back to the point. Have you made your concerns, those same concerns, to Donegal County Board? Because the problem here, in my view, is that this fixture was set in stone from a couple of months back, but this game required 3 days to take place. Why was there not penalties that took place last weekend?
It's not for me to discuss why there were not penalties. I think that's
Have you made the same concerns to Donegal GAA?
Made a representation to the Ulster Council before the game, asking for it to be postponed.
And when you saw that there was a possibility that this might go to a trilogy, which is the issue here, this is the issue we've dealt with, and I'm not saying that the provincial councils are exempt of blame here whatsoever, Charlie, but this is the issue we have, is that fixtures end up getting pushed back for various reasons. It could be because your team is in inter-county action all summer and you can't get your championship started until late in the summer or early in the winter, whatever it may be. Another reason is that there are too many replays. Why was there not a penalty shootout or a free kick-taking competition that took place last weekend?
I don't want to go off the point here. You're asking the wrong person that. That's not for me to comment on. Have you found out,
Donegal GAA why that wasn't the case?
But I'm only here to discuss what has happened. And what has happened, we've had a 3-game turnaround in 10 days, and now you're asking to go out into a club championship at provincial level and tug out again. It's absolutely wrong.
Because the county final took 3 games to take place. That is why there is such a quick turnaround.
Exactly. But
so what is the issue here?
We can only look forward. I can't comment on why there was and there weren't an end to it after game two or after game
next
one.
Season, should Donegal GAA change their structure next year, in your view, to ensure that this does not happen again? In your own county, do you think that should change?
But you're asking the wrong person. And
you're a member of Donegal GAA.
I'm only here to try and address what has happened. It's unheard of to have had a 3-game county final. There was 4 other county finals in Ulster the same day as ours, the first time. If it had been won the first day, this would not be a discussion. This is an unprecedented set of events that could not nearly been accounted for. Possibly won't happen again, as you said, because I think they are bringing a rule next year that this will not be allowed to happen. But this has happened. And we can't be thinking about what we should have done to prevent it. There's no point. You can't look back. this has happened. We have to deal with the here and now. I've been trying to get, I'll try and meet the management maybe later today, but I'm working today, maybe tomorrow morning before they go to cab and see where or not, where each individual player is, and see if I can actually say to my I think they can or cannot tug. Now that's, if we were giving it a 7-day turnaround, this wouldn't be such an issue. We also have to acknowledge that for 95% of players, what the boys did on Sunday, which was replicated around the country, is the pinnacle of their career. And you're asking these not to acknowledge that, not to celebrate that with their families, their wives, their kids, their fathers, their mothers, with the town that gives them so much in terms of sponsorship, wives that let their husbands go out 4 or 5 nights a week, partners that don't see their boyfriends for I don't know how many weeks of the year. And we don't allow them to have that, to acknowledge that and celebrate it without the fear of having to, well, I have to make sure I'm hydrated tomorrow because I've got a game in 3 days' time.
I think that
it's a very simple request. I think that not even a sporting issue.
I think that the point about the celebration, they can obviously come back to at some point. And I mean, if it was just that, obviously, I think that obviously we'd be able to find a solution to it. Is there a chance that they won't tug?
Again, you're asking the wrong person. I don't see that being an issue.
Well, no, but you're probably the right person, Charlie, just because you've said yourself that obviously you would be the person that can step in and make those recommendations. So to clarify, you probably are the person that they're going to turn to say, are these guys in a fit state to tug or not? So,
well, I can't even come because I haven't met them. I was like yesterday morning, I was in Early Kennedy Hospital giving lectures at before 9 o'clock. So I haven't even met them. I don't know what the state of play is with some of these players.
Yeah,
that's just the nature of the thing. There's not enough hours in the day sometimes for everything you want to do.
Yeah.
But the issue is, I think if the Ulster Council take us on board, I will leave you on this. There's a lot of discussion at the moment about people, getting the upper hand, right? You have a team, county champions, which means they're a worthy opponent for anyone. You've given them a 3-week rest. They're now going to meet their so-called counterparts with a 3-day rest. Not even a 3-day rest, a 3-day turnaround. That's unjust. You're giving another team an unfair advantage.
But do you accept, Charlie? Would you accept if you make that point? Would you accept that a strong part of the reason for that happening is, albeit I'm not familiar with the Cavan situation, but it sounds like there was no unforeseen circumstances. The championship was run off as it should have been, and there was a 3-week window between their final and this game. You'd have to accept that some of that lies within the planning of Donegal GAA. And by consequence of that, you just have to live with the... Because it's coming from your own county, you just have to live... Because the alternative is to punish Castlerahan here, who have obviously targeted this game for the last 3 weeks, this date.
I know, but this has happened. There's no point saying we should have done the X, Y, and Z.
No, and that's not what I'm saying, but your suggestion that the game be postponed would be actually to punish ultimately punish Castlerahan.
But I'm not asking to punish anyone. I'm asking Castlerahan, and the very first thing I said when I came on is that I wish Castlerahan all the best, and I'm sure this is disrupting them on some level. But, more than the Castle management and their physio and their doctors, are focusing on their players,
yeah.
I'm focusing on what I have to try and manage. So I said at the very, very start, it was very clear, I want to wish them every success. I know I wish them well. Congratulations on achieving what most players will never achieve.
Yeah, just not this weekend, is what you're saying.
But this has, and I think they would probably appreciate it. I'm sure if the tables were turned, you'd have someone from Castlerahan on the phone this morning. This is just an unprecedented set of events. I think some common sense has to come into play a little bit as well, on top of the concerns we have. We should allow these boys to represent themselves, their families, their club, their parish, at the peak of their ability.
What are you suggesting, Charlie, What are you suggesting as a solution?
Well, the Donegal County Board have already offered a suggestion, and I was only made aware of this recently. After I started this yesterday, the Donegal County Board actually made a representation to Ulster Council before the game last Wednesday. So
what was that?
It'd be put back for a week.
Right.
I think the 7 days. Let them have their recovery this weekend, regroup next week. It'll not interfere with a lot of people, a 7-day turnaround.
And that needs to be put to Castlerahan, I presume, and they need to give it their imprimatur.
I think this won't be an issue going forward from what I hear. But what it will do is that it'll actually give a sense of goodwill to both teams.
Yeah.
And one team won't feel absolutely slighted because they've been giving an unfair
Well, yeah. To be fair to Castlerad, they may feel as if they're on the back foot at that point because they've been targeting this date, and now suddenly because Donegal couldn't get their act together to get the championship run off in time, that they're the ones being have their nose out of joint about it. So to be fair
there was four other county finals on the same day as Donegal. Like, if this had happened in Cavan, you know, if it happened anywhere else, who could have foreseen that they've had such a tight encounter and won after three games, if you're next time, by a solitary point?
Yeah.
So, like, it's very rare to have such a tight contest.
Yeah.
You know, no one could have foreseen this. I think we just have to deal with this as a kind of an isolated event. You know, we're not trying to set precedence for anything. We're trying to deal with the here and now. I don't think there's much point looking back at what someone should have done in terms of fixtures 6 months ago. We have to deal with the here and now, maybe plan for it. I don't think it's going to be an issue going forward because I think games will be wrapped up sooner and not allowed to go to replay. But I think that's what I'm hearing kind of by and by. But I think we have to deal with the here and now. So with the here and now, we have a team who are being asked to play four games in 2 weeks, three of which are at a county final level, of an intensity that for anyone who witnessed it in person or who saw it streamed online will tell you that they probably never saw it as intense. And that includes the majority of inter-county games I've gone to.
Yeah.
And we're asking them to turn around, to acknowledge that, to try and celebrate with the families,
okay,
to acknowledge the champions, and to tog out and represent a county
made that point,
against
yeah. No, that's
their
fair.
County that's champion fair. Counterpart yeah. in 3 days. It's wrong. It shouldn't happen. Give them a chance.
Dr. Charlie McManus, thanks a lot for taking our call.
No bother at all.
Cheers, thank you. We'll see how that pans out over the next few days. Like, I think that it would be, my opinion would be that it would be unfair on the Cavan champions who've been targeting that date, that I think it's a reasonable point to make that the Donegal County Board just didn't have their house in order. And like he himself says, you're not setting a precedent. It's a unique set of circumstances. I think we would all be advocates for player welfare. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And the idea that a group of club amateur players like that should be playing so many games in such quick succession, it's clearly a bad idea. But at the same time, your own county board have backed you into the corner on this.
Yeah, like, it's not entirely unprecedented. 2019 is the year where we've actually seen many factions within the GAA actually wake up to the fact that this is happening and pre-planning. Mm. Like, it happened. The FBD League final was a draw. The National League started the next weekend, so the FBD League final went to penalties. That is common sense. These county finals, and I'm not saying it's Donegal, like Kerry semi-finals last weekend couldn't go to a penalty shootout. I think it was actually because of fading light in the end, in a draw. Like, that should have been pre-planned. Granted, it was a double header, but perhaps that should have been put in a stadium with lights underneath it, with the prospect of it getting dark, with the prospect of penalties happening. Every county board needs to do this. This is not pointing fingers at Donegal. This is not pointing fingers, especially at the Donegal county champions. Like, the thing I feel most sorry about for them was that they had to go out in the session midweek and probably had to take 2 days off work rather than just
the 1 day
off
that
week.
Stuff. Like, I have to say, that is... There's a bit of a straw man about that argument. I know you are, but like, he was bringing up the point about to have celebrations. The fact, like, that's grand. That'll wait.
I don't know, Adrian.
Look,
like,
in a set of unprecedented
win a county final is important.
Absolutely right. But in a set of unprecedented circumstances, where when that happens, a few days later, you're playing in the next round. You're playing in the first round of Ulster. It'll be grand. Hang on, we will celebrate it. It's not going to be the same thing. But we will go and celebrate it, and we'll have a cracking night out. We'll take a leaf out of Guido's book, and we'll go and celebrate it for a week afterwards when everything is said and done. I using that as a, you can't go back to Castlerahan and say, hey, we need to go and celebrate our game, so can you kick that on until Wednesday? That ain't no, you can't, there's no rationale with that, other than the player welfare thing.
Yeah, like I think ideally then it's a situation where you get the fixture fulfilled regardless of whatever it is. You put it in a place where there's floodlights and you have the possibility of playing penalties last week, and from your own perspective, even though you're a week out from the next round, go out and enjoy yourself that night. Winning a county final is a tough task, and even midweek, I say fair play to them. It's not the same. You gotta appreciate these moments when they come around. So
yeah. Unless you've got the first round of Ulster.
No, not for even with that.
You can't be suggesting that, forgetting about let's say the game was scheduled in some other parallel universe, was scheduled for that day.
Like, I'm sure there was. I'm sure it was a 2 day session.
So the player welfare thing wasn't an issue, right? Like, the impact on the bodies wasn't an issue. You couldn't say, listen, we want to go out and celebrate it. So with that the first round of Ulster has to be kicked back on that basis.
Oh, I'm not saying it should be kicked back. Right. Well, I'm just saying this week that they were dead right to go out and enjoy themselves rather than thinking their game 4 days ago.
I'm all for that. Dan Morris says, Roscommon intermediate final went to a replay, extra time and penalties decided it last weekend because the provincial games are this weekend. makes absolute sense. Thanks to Dan for sending that in. Do get in contact with us. We have Rugby Next here on OTBAM. Andy Dunn in studio. We're going to take a quick trip back to the start of September now, when Andy was in studio with Johnny Ward on OTBAM.
On a scale of 1 to 10, finally, how optimistic are you Ireland can reach a semi-final?
About 2.
Oh my God.
Yeah, unfortunately. If you'd asked me this question last November, I would have said 8 out of 10. Unfortunately, I...
That's a hell of a swing.
Yeah, it was a hell of a swing in performance. One of the great sporting mysteries to me, that how we...
Gone from the New Zealand game
to... the New Zealand game to 2 to 3 months later with the same group of people. It really looked like a different group. And
teams have figured us out, though. Is it not?
Yeah, nice? teams certainly figured out the style of play. And there's an element of, you know, from a coaching point of view, do you abandon ship very early, or do you stick with the processes that have delivered you great success?
That's a huge problem as well. Like,
and,
for
you know, for any sport and team, you've got. At the time, we were second in the world. We've beaten the All Blacks, won in Australia, and won a Grand Slam. And you have a bad day against England, you don't suddenly throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, OK, we've got to change everything. But I think it was pretty evident by, say, 10 minutes to go in the Welsh game,
we're in trouble.
You know, things were... It had been a pretty disastrous Six Nations. The England game, again, in Twickenham wouldn't have done a whole lot for the group confidence. And then a much improved Welsh game will help a little. But I think there's a fickle nature to our performance at the moment. And as a result, I don't see it right now. But the irony being, if we get through Scotland and we get through Japan, as the tournament goes on, I think we will become an increasing threat. My biggest concern at the moment is actually the Scotland and Japan, this 6-day turnaround.
Mm. Yeah, that is was Andy Dunn with us in September. We had a comment actually in from BMC on YouTube who said, the trouble with Irish rugby is there's very little dissent from players to all the commentators on this show. No one was calling in early 2019 that Ireland's game plan had been figured out. Andy, it was September, but you've been saying it for a while. I don't know where to go with this post-mortem, given the conversations we've had over the last couple of weeks. Mm. What do you think? Where did it all go wrong?
We have to do
where
another?
Do we go from now?
Maybe we could focus on where do we go from here, maybe.
If Philip Brown gives you a call in the morning and says, Andy, I've been watching everything you've said there, you're making a lot of sense. We need to put some sort of a plan in place for the next 4 years. What's your top three?
My gut feeling is that, first of all, we don't need to do one of these...
Genesis-style reports.
Oh, Jesus, spare me. I mean, you know, what I would think would be wise is actually, I saw Gordon Darcy had suggested giving players the kind of immunity in terms of, you know, don't disclose their identity, but ask for their feedback and, you know, take the gloves off and get full feedback from the players. I think that would be smart. And maybe they should just leave it at that. You don't need another Genesis report. There's nothing wrong with the game in Ireland in terms of we've a very successful provincial or club setup. I mean, Wales are pathetic in the Pro 14. They've never got close to winning a European title, but they've had 3 World Cup semi-finals. They're in this dud game this morning, but they're still in it. The third, fourth place playoff. They've 3 Grand Slams and 4 championships under Gatland, and they've a lot of young guys who are going to develop for the next World Cup. So they're in a healthy state. Irish rugby below the tier of the national side is in a much, much healthier state than Wales, for example. Yeah. It's just literally about, we don't need a root and branch analysis of everything that's wrong in Irish rugby. We just need to get the Irish team playing well. Very achievable.
Does that involve not talking about 4-year cycles? Does that involve not getting focused on playing New Zealand in 2023?
I think if we want to be successful in the next World Cup, we've got to try and develop a style of play that, for example, we may struggle with in certain games. And if it's a Six Nation game here or there that we lose but are trying to play a certain way, who cares? In my mind. Well, the IRFU obviously care because it's 80% of the revenue that's generated by the national team, you know, the Six Nations. But, you know, England have lost key games in the last year in the Six Nations. They drew 38 all with Scotland when they should have gone and won it. But they were trying to play a certain style of rugby. And I always think it's easier to play a certain style of rugby and slightly tighten up and make it a bit more accurate than play incredibly tight conservative rugby and then try and branch out. And when we've tried to branch out at a World Cup, it doesn't work because you're under huge pressure, huge intensity, and you can't replicate skills that you haven't practiced before. We could run into the opposition and fall on the ground again and do that for another 4 years, and our emotional pitch will get, classic example is we're going to be playing England in this Six Nations, and every Tom, Dick and Harry on the street is going to, the Irish begrudger, and we're going to love it, and we'll probably beat them, and we beat the world champions because we did it in 2004. And it's so probably, it's a good memory. Year, it's a good memory for everyone. But we were garbage in 2007 again. So, I mean, we're just going to keep repeating the cycle. Then we just shut up, going on about the World Cup. Because it's never going to change unless we have some breadth of vision and some commitment to actually playing a certain style of rugby.
So you would sort of recommend an acceptance that we're not always, we don't have to win. And I appreciate that. Obviously,
I'm not saying throw a game, yeah.
But like so would you extend that out then to the player group in terms of like where we should go from now, from like dead dot, from here to the next 4 years, like with the managing caps, I suppose, is that the way to, the euphemism to put it, to ultimately shift out a bunch of the older players and put faith in the younger lads to come in and rack up those caps? Except that results aren't necessarily going to go your way.
Not necessarily, no. I think it should happen, in a very, very natural way. I think they should just pick on form, which we haven't done for we've history on that too. We don't pick on form. We pick on reputation. Mm. And if we were to very, very simply change to picking on form, there'd be changes anyway. So I wouldn't throw out, a set group of players or anything like that. They're all very, very talented, resilient blokes, and they're well able to play good rugby again, most of them. So I wouldn't consider, this drastic chop six of the squad, bring in a bunch of 17-year-olds and build it from there. It's pointless. But, establish a style that is a bit more creative in attack, improve our defence. They're just simple things to work on with the top coaches that are there. And simply then to look at picking on form as opposed to reputation. Those couple of things done alone mightn't bring you a guaranteed Grand Slam or Six Nations, but it'll see a continuity and an improvement in their play. They might enjoy it, they might relax, they might have a nice energy about the group, which, I don't know, you were over in Japan and everything I've heard is that, lots of the teams and squads were enjoying it, except Ireland.
You would say that.
I thought Ireland seemed pretty happy most of the time. I think the New Zealand result actually, performance came as a shock to a lot of them, which maybe is a bit more of a concern.
Okay.
But like that they didn't actually see this coming, that perhaps in a week where you get pulverised by New Zealand, you should actually see the indicators in training rather than actually seeing the indicators.
Some of them were saying it was one of the best prep weeks. Did I hear Johnny Sexton say it was one of the best prep weeks he's ever had?
I think James Ryan made similar sounds as well. So like that doesn't exactly fill you with a whole pile of confidence either.
It doesn't. It's a bit like the doc there going around in circles before me. I'm getting dizzy. I'd be pretty adamant if, like you said, if Philip Brown rang me, I would say there'd be my recommendations. Don't spend loads of money on a review that no one cares about. Ask the players their opinion and pick on form and give the new coach a chance. I think Andy Farrell's got, from what I gather, a very similar outlook on attack, for example, to Stuart Lancaster, having worked together with England. And that alone makes me kind of relax a little bit and think, right, we're actually going to play some rugby.
Andy Farrell, Stuart Lancaster obviously was a guy who went into the Ireland camp at some point over the last couple of years and had a bit of an input. And is there room for more of that now? Is that?
Well, the amazing thing is that the entire England coaching ticket from the 2015 World Cup all of them now are based in Ireland. Bad, so we've Roundtree down in Munster, Stewart in Leinster as head coach. We've Farrell as Ireland head coach and Mike Catt. So the entire group. I wonder if maybe they get the band back together and give the World Cup another go. You never know. But I think there would certainly be a... I think they've all a very healthy working relationship. They're all good mates still. And that augurs well because, you know, you would hopefully find a coordination in their efforts. Mm. I don't think there's any suggestion that there's been club versus country issues or anything, but at least there'll be a continuity. There may be a continuity in terms of how teams play, for example, as well. New Zealand have done that for years, that their top super rugby sides try and play the exact same way that New Zealand do. I don't know in Ireland... There's not that much input or interference from the Irish management in terms of the style with which they want a provincial side to play, and maybe that's something worth investigating.
I think you were saying after the Japan game that they looked more skillful than us as a team.
Yes.
Does that come from the style of play? Is that a facade, or like I guess you've already made the point that this is a national team issue, not an ingrained root and branch issue. Yeah. So I guess it is a facade.
Yeah, I think isolated skill levels. I wouldn't say if you picked off four of the Japan players and put them in the Leinster team, they would stand out and look like they've got more skill than the Leinster players. But I think in my own experience of playing with a team, the team falls into a rhythm. The execution of skills falls under that. I always remember we had one pre-season summer with Matt Williams and Willie Anderson where they simply practiced offloads with the forwards and the backs and the players linking in. We didn't do ruck practice all that summer. We might have got blitzed in a couple of early rucks, but suddenly guys like Peter Coyle playing tight head, doing pivot passes and flicking the ball out of tackles. And we put 40 points on Toulouse, one of the great Toulouse sides in Donnybrook. We didn't fundamentally change as players in a two-month period, but we were given a bit of license to use some skills that we probably had already. Mm. I don't think the license was given to players, and when there's a tension around trying something different, where maybe there's a threat around surrendering possession or making the wrong call, players do things that look silly. They can look well below par in terms of their ability. But I just think, I was at an event for Nissan during the week and Stuart Lancaster was asked how did he change the culture in English rugby, and he said he changed it in a week. So you don't need, you know, when he came in after the 2011 World Cup and there were midgets being thrown off boats in Auckland Harbour, and
he moved them out of their base.
He changed up how they thought. Yeah. He did some simple, smart, practical things, and we've a tendency maybe to go for the overkill, and there's not a massive amount wrong. It's just that at the national team level, unfortunately, in the last 2 years, I think Joe just became overly, tightened up our game too much, became overly conservative, and the players look like they kind of fell off a cliff in terms of performance and psychology and every part of it. I mean, to hear that they thought it was the best prep week they ever had and then go out and actually deliver a performance that looks so flat is really difficult to reconcile, you know?
Yeah, they could do worse than the structures you're talking, get somebody like Stuart Lancaster, given that those relationships are there, get him in at the very least to get... Could you come in and make a set of recommendations, having watched what you've seen over the last while, knowing what you know of me...
But it's interesting. Andy himself, I'm sure, is going to, you know, if you watch an Irish team warming up on match day, Andy Farrell's not even on the field, really. It's constantly Joe. Joe's everywhere. He's running in between players. He's an extremely hands-on coach. That was his style. So you would wonder how much input he had or how much opportunity he had to really influence how the team plays. So this is his opportunity now to go in and say, right...
You suggest that he's not that tarnished by what went on because he didn't have enough opportunity to voice his input.
I am, yeah. I would say he... I'd be curious to find out how much input any of the coaching team had, because from what it looks like... Joe is a very, very hands-on operator at every level, and he has micromanaged things, you know, at every level. So it would be nice for Andy to come out from the shadow there and say, right, here's my philosophy, here's what I do, and let's give him a chance.
Any more? Can we put a little full stop on it?
Please.
I've just been watching some of the pitch side footage of the, we'll very briefly touch on this third, fourth place playoff, but the two lads, and Gatland and Hansen, sort of, and it looks like they're out for a walk in the park and have just bumped into each other. They couldn't give a shout about it by the looks of things. What's going to happen in this one?
I couldn't care less. I think it's one of sports' all-time
pointless games.
Pointless, anticlimactic games. Nobody wants to play it. They're doing their best. New Zealand have come out and said, you know, we've got to show that we're resilient and we've got to show the kids back home.
To do it for the jersey, I saw.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to hear that anyway.
The list of things the jersey would, you know, feature the top 10 of a normal week.
I presume New Zealand will win.
Eddie Jones was straight out after the semi-final saying that, you know, that was a great performance against New Zealand, but we're going to have to, no matter who comes through this game tomorrow, we're going to have to up our ante in a big way next weekend. Isn't the truth that actually they can afford to dip off from where they were at last week and still beat South Africa?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think if you look at it again, if you look at it in separation, England were arguably one of their greatest ever performances last Saturday. And if you compare that to how bad South Africa were winning against Wales and just put the two of them together, yes, England could drop down a gear playing against that standard of South Africa. But South Africa have good history in World Cup finals. They're hugely physical. And I think the physicality is always an interesting thing. We were going to draw a line on it, but if we look at how Ireland were stopped, it was about teams physically stopped us in terms of the one-to-one collisions, and that had a knock-on effect on the quality of the rest of our game. So if you take England, for example, the South Africans say, right, one last effort, 80 minutes, we're huge physical specimens and we're emotionally at fever pitch, let's just physically stop England game momentum, and what have they got outside of that? Now, I do think they've got variation in their game and they've got the capacity to find solutions, but it's going to make life a lot harder for them, and they're a vastly more physical side than the All Black side, I think, as well. So I think it's going to be a hugely interesting game and a clash of styles, and I would fully hope that England come through it and win, because for the sake of rugby, that the style that South Africa won the World Cup in 07 like set the game back about 3 years. So let's hope England can win in a similar style to how they won last week, by playing brilliant rugby, by playing a brilliant kicking game, playing a brilliant distribution game, playing a physical game, a dynamic game as well. Very combative, but South Africa don't have two or three types of style of play. They've won, and they're going out to stop England.
So. Yeah, and Razi Erasmus says they're not going to deviate from that, like, know, almost smirking when asked the question, but like, we're clearly not going to deviate off the plan.
No.
So how does that clash of styles, what happens when they clash?
Yeah, well, I mean, it comes down to how they can affect England's, England's set piece ball for a start. England will launch a lot of attack from their scrum or line out, if they can disrupt that. Mm. The scrum is going to be fascinating, as they've picked Kitchoff and Malcolm Marks on the bench again, and they've two guys maybe who are considered more physical scrummagers and more technically strong scrummaging guys to come in and just put the squeeze on their source of their possession. So I think the line out and scrum will be very key in that. Their line speed, how fast they pressurise England when they've got the ball, and then if they can catch them, they'll have no problem putting them on the floor. I mean, it's the idea of how fast they come off the line and squeeze England's execution there. So I would imagine they'll be focused on their kicking game to improve, because their kicking game was awful. They kicked a lot against Wales, but a lot of it was rubbish. So if they can kick more accurately and put the squeeze on the England back three again, you can sit. You've often seen cases. I would have a tiny little question mark around Johnny May, for example.
Would you defensively?
Just being, I've incredibly fast and good attack play, but just I'd have a question mark about him.
He's been decent under the high ball.
He has, yeah. But I think, you know, just there's something about him.
What are you thinking?
Just there's a classic winger presentation. Now, yeah. This is a long-standing prejudice that I would have as an out half. By the way, you try and pick off the wingers by. Purely just by gut instinct, and you're like, I'm going to put a few up on him and see if he cracks.
Yeah.
And Johnny May...
You think he might?
Yeah, I think they might go after him. And if he drops one early, I think they might just be that type of side that will just repetitively do it. Mm. I've seen it happen on a few occasions. Not sure, maybe they could go after... it's Watson on the other side, isn't it? Mm. They could do either. But I do think that'll be an interesting area. They'll also look to... try and put England under significant pressure, yeah.
And the flip side, obviously, Ford is like not necessarily really a running out half. He'll, you know, put players through or look to kick from the boot. Ronan O'Gara, the Examiner this morning, was saying that he's gone back, and he had initially been very critical of him and said that he's a bit of a weak point for that England team, but he's kind of gone back on that now and said actually he's really, his quality of execution from placed ball and out of hand has been really top-notch.
Yeah. Also, which is ironic, if Rog was criticising him, he's made something like 58 out of his last 60 tackles in international rugby.
Right.
So as a weak link there, he's ironed that out. He's not making dominant tackles because he's too small to do that, but he's not missing any. Mm-hmm. And that affords his back row a chance. He can stick on them like a piece of chewing gum until the artillery arrives. And that's always been a tactic for small out halves. I think it's unfair to say he's not a running threat. I think he has that in his toolbox. But what he's really learned is that his role is to make everyone else around him look better, and he distributes really well. When he wants to run wide, he'll drop deeper and he'll give players outside him time. When he wants to take it to the line, he'll change his alignment. He'll be very, very flat and be a threat. And he's got a really nice kicking game now that I'm sure Rog is looking at and appreciating in terms of or identifying as a strength that he himself had so brilliantly, you know. So I think it's a fair and just selection because he made, you know, he'd well documented cock-ups in the last World Cup, and it's nice to see him get a chance again.
Yeah. Matt Dawson, reading some of his stuff on the BBC during the week, he was talking about like the, you know, the classic how many teams from that team would get into that team.
Oh yes.
And was like a big fat zero was his
for the 0-3 side.
Yeah, he said for this South Africa team versus this England team, how many South Africans would get into the England team, and he was like, you know, he made some arguments.
Cheslin Kobe
versus May. He was giving it to May, he was
no
giving
chance.
It
to
Ben Youngs over Fafler.
No, that's Matt Dawson at his arrogant best, I would say. Faf de Klerk would walk into the team. He's a far superior player to Ben Youngs. I think Ben Youngs, in fairness, I was critical of him, had probably his best game in an England shirt last week. But before that, even across the last 8 to 12 months, I was really looking at Youngs, thinking he's the one player that they're not quite world class.
Do they get away with that because they have Ford and Farrell in their backs at the moment, because they don't really rely on nine as much of a playmaker?
I think they get away with it more because of what's in front of them as opposed to what's outside them. I mean, they've got one of the best back rows in the world, and they definitely have the best front five in the world. So Ben Youngs is operating, you know, the ball's coming up to him on a silver platter, and he can take his time to make decisions, and at times even...
Same could be said of Faf, really, that he's getting it on the silver platter as well.
Yeah, but I think Faf has more... he's more dynamic around the field. I think he reads the game better. He makes decisions. Last week, when there was a scrum wheel and Wales took it onto the left hand side, his anticipation, he diagonally ran in the opposite direction to everyone else to cover what he knew was going to be a kick based on how Wales had set up and saved a try. And it kind of got glossed over a little. That's the type of thing he's got that I think maybe the ability to think more quickly and more clarity than Ben Youngs. So I'd probably say Faf gets in there, and maybe Cheslin Colby as well.
Yeah.
Well, definitely Cheslin Colby, actually.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's not a huge amount. Yeah.
He's got a couple of 50-50 shots. He went through some of them. To be fair, you kind of reading it as an Irish person, I was like, oh, well, his 50-50 call there is the classic. We do the exact same 50-50, stuff ourselves.
50-50, but it's actually 70-30. Yeah.
So, what happens?
Oh, I think England will win. In a a brilliant battle compared to last week. I don't think they'll
be
the
same game.
No, I think it'd be quite a different game. I think it's a matter of, can England hold their nerve? Because I think they're going to be hit with an onslaught. And sometimes what you've got to do is not try and play your way out of the onslaught, because, you know, the fancy stuff gets really messed up, and the nice wide passes or the flick passes seem to feed this hunger in the opposition defence, and you see a ball getting, you know, a player gets smashed man and ball, and ball starts bouncing around the floor, and a guy kicks on through, and the crowd get fever pitch, you know. So I think what they've to do is manage the onslaught for as long as they can, and I think South Africa will eventually tire, and I think England have the dynamism and the skill level to then pick them off in that last 15-20 minutes, and just, they need to be patient. Their kicking is excellent, hopefully pick up a few penalties they'll be looking for. If South Africa are, you know, I would imagine South Africa are going to be dicing with rules, yeah, you know, a little bit, you know, flirting around the offside line a lot. So
we'll all cheer them home.
I wouldn't cheer South Africa home if they win.
England, I mean.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, I'd rather England win, because I like the style with which they play. But we've got to deal with the.
We're mature now as a nation. This is the.
It's tough going. Like, it's going to be tough.
And they're here. Yeah, I don't know. I think they might be around for a while as well. We shall see.
Well, they're a young side.
Pleasure having you in. Enjoy the. I know you want to get away as quickly as you can to get the TV on and watch this bronze medal final.
So we'll
let you out the gap. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Thanks, man. Andy Dunn, as always, 5 to 9 on this Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. We've got the All Stars up next. First, the Irish women's hockey team has the chance to qualify for the Olympics this weekend with their two-legged qualifier against Canada in Donnybrook. Here's Nicky Daly, who was speaking to Off the Bench about previous heartache for the Irish women's hockey team at this stage.
God, we had such a great start to the Olympic qualifying campaign in Valencia in 2015, and we ended up topping our group. But the way that they set up that tournament was different to the World Cup. So when you, in the World Cup, when you came top two, you went straight into a semi-final.
Yes.
Quarter-final, sorry. Yes. So they did it differently in Valencia. So first played fourth in...
Right.
It was still a quarter final, but they
you didn't get a boost from top of the group.
And so we ended up facing China, because China had kind of got it wrong in their group, so they ended up finishing last. And at the time, I think China were ranked sixth in the world,
fifth in the world.
And so we ended up having to play our qualification match against China, and actually, you know, we were better than them in full time. But it went to a shootout, and we lost on sudden death penalties against China.
By the width of a post, really, almost in one last case, yeah.
So
I've heard, is it true that some of you went back to Valencia later on, I think a year, something later on, one of your players said to me that she actually shook going back on the same field.
Yeah, it was, we just got so close. I think, you know, we really thought that was going to be the time that, you know, we were going to make it, and it was just devastating, you know, to kind of have the run-in that we had had, and, you know, the results that we had got. You know, we probably thought we deserved it, and I think we did deserve it in full time, and then to lose it that way is just so hard to take.
Heartbreaking.
Nearly 9 a.m. Welcome along to the third annual OTB All Stars. Huge achievement for everybody to be nominated in these categories.
It's called the Off the Ball Stars.
Off the Ball Stars. Huge achievement for everybody to be nominated. We've gone no expense. It's the third annual OTB Stars.
Every expense spared.
These awards tend to be the high point of the careers of those who've been nominated, indeed those who will go on to win. There will be no further ado. Owen, what have we got?
Hard to believe it's that time of the year already, isn't it? And it's great to have you with us this evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get through seven categories this evening in our awards gala dinner. Our first category tonight is Hurling Game of the Year. I'm not sure who actually picks up these awards. Hurling Game of the Year, nominee one is Kilkenny 222, Galway 320. That is in the Leinster Round Robin Hurling Championship. Wexford 21, Kilkenny 118. That draw, remember, on the last day of the Round Robin Great Leinster Championship, wasn't it? Dublin 319, Galway 24, Dublin dumping Galway out. Also on the same night, a fantastic night for hurling. The Leinster final also gets a nomination. Wexford 123, Kilkenny 23 points. And then the final two nominees is that incredible weekend of hurling we had in Croke Park. Limerick 217, Kilkenny 121 in the first semi-final. And then Wexford 320, Tipperary 128. There are your nominees for Hurling Game of the Year. And I hand you over to my glamorous assistant to reveal the winner.
No expense. I really need a knife. Have we got a knife? Do we get like an envelope knife?
We have like a 12-carat knife outside, just hanging around.
And we've killed the music for dramatic effect, I'm assuming. Not that the track has run out. The winner is, there really could only be one, Hurling Game of the Year is the Wexford Tipperary All-Ireland semi-final. There really could only be one winner there, to be fair. I wasn't aware of who was going to be the winner there until, obviously, because the thing is so transparent. But there really had to be only one winner there.
It was a heart-stopping game.
It came down, I presume the other semi was number two on the list.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've had enough.
Enough of that guff.
God, please. Okay, so I picked that winner, obviously. Yeah. But I really can't see another game throughout the year that had just the amount of heart-wrenching events that happened in the game. It's actually hard to comprehend just how many different events took place, how many different times your view changed on who was going to get over the line, especially with the sending off, and then the whole aftermath of that, the emotion that Liam Sheedy showed, the devastation of Davy Fitzgerald, and then I think it's actually added to by the fact that Tip went on to win the All-Ireland, because
to crush, like, the fact that that game wasn't even the final wasn't even in the mix here, I'm sure.
Exactly. Granted that the red card kind of destroyed that as a contest and it was a poor day, but like, just on top of that, that kind of makes this an even more important game, that I think Wexford, they beat them in the Leinster final, they would have been confident to go on to win the All-Ireland final after such an entertaining game, the de facto All-Ireland final, I dare say, without being disrespectful to Kilkenny people. What a game, one of the best, and the All-Ireland hurling semi-final weekend has turned into, quality-wise, the best weekend in the Irish sporting calendar. We move on to our second category today. Our second category is Rejection of the Year. First nominee is the United States of America rejecting Dermot Connolly. Next up is Ashburn Credit Union rejecting County Meath. Greg Kennedy rejecting TJ Reid. And our final nominee is Tickets.ie rejecting Dublin and Mayo fans during that scramble for All-Ireland semi-final tickets. Tough competition.
Rejection of the year. I have no great leaning either way on this one. Transparent.
But it really can only be one when they're here, I'm sure.
And the winner is, congratulations, Donald Trump, the United States rejection of Dermot Connolly.
Congratulations to everybody involved there. One of the most significant rejections we've seen. It's up there with LeBron in the 2016 NBA Finals when he rejected that Golden State player.
It's fair enough to say there should have been a winner. I was in a pub in Bray last weekend that had also had a signed Dublin jersey up on the wall, and everybody just went about their business like as if this was something that was really normal.
Did you take a picture and post it on Twitter?
No.
Outraged?
No.
Your full outrage game?
I definitely wasn't outraged. I think it's a bit weird, but I find it hard to be outraged by the idea. Like, if the Kilkenny team that you were discussing yesterday morning that went on all those runs, that jersey would have appeared in that pub in Bray, I probably would have been like, oh yeah, why not?
Wouldn't have been an annihilate. Just great teams get appreciated wherever they go.
Yeah. Game recognises game in Bray.
If it was a Kerry pub, now it'd be different, but it's a Wicklow pub, so...
Kerry, wouldn't be...
Or if it was a Mayo pub.
Raised to the ground, that pub.
Yeah, absolutely it would. Nominees number three for category number three are as follows. Category number three is Football Game of the Year. First nominee is Down 313, Armagh 217, one of the games of a cracking Ulster Championship. Armagh up again for their entertaining clash with Mayo, 213 to 115, Mayo getting over the line in that one. Meath Clare in the last round of the qualifiers is our next nominee. The Munster final between Cork and Kerry. and Kerry and Donegal, the 120 apiece game that felt more like a hurling game in the Super 8s in Croke Park. And then final nominee for Football Game of the Year is the drawn All-Ireland final, Dublin 116, Kerry 116. I was away for the replay, so I didn't bother nominating it.
I don't know what happened. This category is an absolute farce. This shouldn't even be a category. There should really only be one game nominated here, because the rest have just been invited so we can squeeze a couple hundred quid out of them to make a few bob out of it. The winner is, of course, the Football Game of the Year, Dublin 116, Kerry 116, in the first, the drawn game. The rest of the game was a farce category.
Kerry Donegal, I thought, was up there as well. But Kerry Donegal was missing something, because you could sense that this was not knockout.
Well, 116 to 116 was never supposed to be 116 to 116.
No, and again, it was kind of like that hurling semi-final weekend. You just couldn't believe you managed to cram all these things into the space of a finite window. And that's what happened. And, you know, there's a lot of pain that goes with that. So I think we're going to move swiftly on, if that's okay.
Swiftly along on.
Category number 4 is International Moment of the Year. Our first nominee is James Carr's goal, leaving soccer fans dumbfounded on Twitter. Next nominee is Josh Prey's general bemusement with the GAA. Next up is Donal Cusack blaming the Brits for basically everything. And next up is Rhian O'Neill becoming John Cena. For the best international moments from the GAA calendar this summer. Who's it going to be, Adrian?
And the winner is... Somebody get me a knife. These envelopes are really hard to open. Onus sealed them because the process had to be so watertight with glue. The winner is International Moment of the Year. Congratulations, Mayo's James Carr, leaving soccer fans dumbfounded.
And it's been a great couple of months for Nathan Murphy, who was of course crowned IMRO Sports Broadcaster of the Year. He of course played a big helping hand here in James Carr getting to 8 million views. You had people from Buenos Aires to Zimbabwe saying, "What is this game? Handball, ref," and all those hilarious gags. And you know, James Carr brought Gaelic football to a whole new audience.
Can I be a curmudgeon?
Yes.
What the hell were the guy with, particularly the substitute, number 17, not sure who he was. What was he doing? Like, there was an element of that goal that if somebody, a defender that actually knew what they were doing, would have cleaned them out of it, never should have happened. Like, I would equate James Carr's goal, that goal from AO, brilliant goal, brilliant finish, fair play to him. Like, you know, you play what's in front of you. And in this case, what's running out of your way. I would equate that goal with Maradona's, maybe his two goals at the 86 World Cup against England, certainly the second one, where you rewatch that and you're looking at the England players going, what are you doing? Like, put in a challenge. One lad, like, just strolling along up alongside him, front row view. What's, oh, look at this. Maradona's making a beeline for the goal. What's the point of putting in a challenge?
It's easy to say that when you're not playing in the World Cup in 1986, so you're not there as a Galway player.
I mean, I wasn't playing at the 86 World Cup on. That is true. And no, I was not that Galway number 17. But Jesus Christ, put in a challenge.
It was Eamon Branigan.
Was it?
The number 17, yeah.
Right, put in a challenge. It's a forwards tackle, as Tommy says. I agree with him.
God, you're outing Tommy there. I'm not liking the criticism here for Eamon Branigan. This is a
well,
celebration.
There's criticism to be had. He's thrown by James Carr. Right? Like, sort of almost patted him on the back in the way through.
James Carr is the Christopher Columbus of GAA, bringing us to a whole new world and hopefully more of our friends in the new world to come back with.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Move
on to the new category.
He's brought us to a whole new audience. 8.5 million people. Congratulations. Next up, we've got Hurler of the Year. Three nominees for Hurler of the Year. Same with the rip-off. PWC, GAA, GPA All-Stars are Patrick Horgan of Cork, Seamus Callanan of Tipperary, and Kilkenny's TJ Reid. Of course, this means far more than who actually wins the rip-off award tonight, so the big one, Adrian.
And the winner is... We should have had a drum roll for this, shouldn't we?
Drum rolls will...
We didn't carry the envelopes taking so long to open.
Drum rolls very PWC, GAA, GPA.
Right, okay, a bit cliched. The winner is Hurler of the Year, Seamus Callanan. Congrats, Seamus. Well done.
Just look at his face.
Look what, at his face.
I know it's kind of hard in the immediate aftermath of moments like this to put things into context. Mm. But if you can you rank this moment for Seamus Callanan's career?
Oh, it must be the all-time highlight. Like above the 1-2 in the All-Ireland. Was it 1-2 in the All-Ireland final? I would, by the way, would have given it solely, and I know you're going to say this should exist in another category, but screw it, I'm going, there's not another category that exists that this should be in, but the goal from the knees, Horgan's goal from the knees, that should have warranted whatever prize was on offer, just give it to him.
We could have just done score of the year and put that up against James
moment
Carr.
Of the year.
Moment of the year. Moment of the year would have been such an easy one.
It was better than score of the year. It was different. It was a level above that.
Yeah.
And also,
I guess
also in a non-Emma Brannigan way, whoever was the Kilkenny lad who was on him was like almost decapitated him just before he got the shot away.
I mean, Emma Brannigan didn't have a stick in his hand.
Well, he was just running past him.
Next up, our penultimate award for the third annual Off the Ball Stars is Unlikely Rivalry of the Year. And the nominees are Joe Brolly versus Radio Telefiche Aaron, Dublin versus The Spread in the Leinster Championship, Brian Hogan versus Hawkeye, Meath manager Andy McEntee versus unnamed local journalist, and finally, the Kerry Mafia versus David Goff.
And the winner is, I've pretty opened the envelope here because it takes too long, is, this shouldn't have even been in the category because it was a surprise to, unlikely to nobody, Joe Brolly versus Radio Telefiche Aaron.
Congratulations to both of you, both playing a big part in this.
That shouldn't have been in that category because it was the most likely, Joe Brolly versus anybody is the most likely rivalry of any year.
It's a good point actually, to be quite honest with you. Need to review it for next year. Our final award tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is Footballer of the Year. The nominees are Stephen Cluxton, Dublin; Jack McCaffrey, Dublin; Con O'Callaghan, Dublin.
I really found you found your stride there with the nominations announcing right at the last category. I feel like Marty Whelan here on, what's it called?
Winning streak.
Footballer of the Year. He is on a winning streak. It's Jack McCaffrey.
Congratulations, Jack McCaffrey. Back-to-back winner of Off the Ball Star for Footballer of the Year.
Right. What was your rationale? I mean, what made you discount the other two? Is that maybe a fair way of asking it?
Brilliant all season. Rebounded from the Paddy Durkin shellacking he took to put in one of the best All-Ireland football performances we've ever seen. Simple as that. Then again, so did Cluxton.
You didn't get carried away with your... There was no emotional vote for Cluxton?
No, you can't... You
don't let emotion...
Are you suggesting that emotion gets into the Off the Ball Stars? This is a cold, calculated, factual award ceremony, and I wouldn't dare let this be tarnished. We'll be back next year for the fourth annual Off the Ball Stars, I trust.
Like any great Off the Ball Stars, OTB Stars awards, like any great award ceremony, there is no outro. We're going to clunkily head out of here. Thanks to him for all his amazing hard work on that. Hope you enjoyed it. If you've got any categories of your own, keep them coming into us. We're going to hit the sports news in a little bit with Phil Egan, but first up, before all of that, the crappy quiz.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Off the ball. Oh, wow. This is...
I'm washed off the ball. I'm Scottish. I'm super new.
I met a South African last night and he was there. He knew that Dublin won 5 in a row because he watched us off the ball.
Oh.
He really did. And he lives in Thailand.
I've watched Off the Ball on YouTube. Say goodbye.
We love you. We love you. We love you. And everywhere we follow. We follow.
We absolutely love it.
Off the ball. This is OTB Sports Radio. Ireland's first and only sports radio station. OTB AM.
Chris Martin.
Oh, you're kidding.
September. Kyle Lafferty.
Are you joking me?
Is that right?
I know, is that right?
Anybody else?
Leash, was it?
Like, that is one of the most stupid questions.
Darius Vassell?
Seriously, you all need to just stay quiet. This is getting really annoying doing this quiz.
What is going on here?
Welcome along to the shoutiest segment on Irish radio. It's the scintillating, it's the stupefying, it's the splendido crappy quiz. Every Friday, we pit three of Team Off the Ball up against one another in a quiz of sporting factoids at the end of the week. Happy Halloween, everybody. And I would welcome tonight's contestants.
That was yesterday, Owen.
Good point.
Ultimately, that was yesterday, so...
I don't get the
ultimately,
joke.
Ultimately, that was yesterday.
Do you just want to get all these jokes out of the way at the start? Or?
Ultimately, I'll probably have more as we go.
He's probably been saying them all morning since 7:45.
Ultimately, we'll see.
I don't know why Owen doesn't like Halloween, by the way.
You really are like a jack-in-the-box, wound up, ready to go with loads of humour.
You're, what's wrong with your... You have big Halloween issues.
Yeah.
I've never, like, ridiculous Halloween issues.
There's no issue.
that I have.
You hate it.
I think no, I have an issue with Halloween, but that's not an issue. It's actually just thinking rationally and realizing that it's stupid.
You're joyless.
Weekend. Great bank holiday. Enjoy yourself. Indian summer sometimes. Scaring people. It's stupid.
His point yesterday morning was that he didn't like the fact that some people got off on big bangs from fireworks.
He had a big bang theory, did he?
He didn't like that people got off on big bangs.
You mistake.
Well, I got that.
That's a good guy.
Let's welcome tonight's contestants. Look at that on screen. Wow, John, that's some great visual mixing. I'm scary. Now I am scared. Allow me to welcome tonight's contestants. Our first contestant today has the green and gold socks sorted, the royal shorts in the bag, and a key pack jersey sorted as well. This Halloween, he's dressing up as a Meath footballer, and there ain't nothing Andy McEntee can do about it. Give it up for the Meath hillbilly, Tommy Rooney.
Hello.
Very welcome.
Morning.
In the middle seat is a man who's dressing up as Pat Mustard from Father Ted for Halloween, because the milkman always delivers, and this man has been delivering crappy quiz wins every single week. Give it up for Phil the Power Egan.
Pat Mustard's character.
There's no stopping you.
No stopping you. And now on to this week's quiz, to paraphrase Pat Mustard. Anyway. Our final contestant today is dressing up as Tommy DeVito from Goodfellas, so he can have a cover for his faux outrage for the weekend. When he asks for a chai latte with almond milk and walnuts on top this weekend, and the barista says, "That's a funny order," this contestant will flare up and say, "Funny how?" Give it up for Adrian, who's your daddy, Barry.
Just having a flat white at the minute, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
It's all I drink on. Are these constant references every week to different types of coffee? Just flat white.
You're actually really boring.
Why am I having flat white? Is that what you just asked me?
Yeah, like why is flat white the coffee of choice?
Flat white is the coffee of choice, and Tommy will attest to this. It's the best coffee to milk ratio that you can have.
So I've heard. Would you agree?
He freaked me out a couple of weeks ago when he told me how bad cappuccinos were for you. So
really?
I moved on, yeah.
I think about the amount of milk that's in them.
What's wrong with milk?
Well, it's like drinking a pint of milk every time you have a coffee.
I don't have a pint of cappuccino.
There's frequently there.
How is there more milk in a cappuccino than there is in a pint of milk?
I mean, it'd be close to one thing. On
200 calories in a cappuccino says.
I think the problem is that the milk is frothed.
What's in a flat white, Jeff?
So that just increases the amount of milk. Where does the milk come from to take it from?
I can't hear you.
I think the frothing process of the milk is what makes it bad for you.
There's a lack of scientific understanding of how liquids can be turned into more liquid here, I think. But you're very welcome.
Thanks, Owen. Appreciate it.
As ever, the format is a classic crappy quiz with four questions each, and after four rounds, the trivia equivalent of taking every game as it comes is up. That's the rapid fire round. You can podcast the crappy quiz on offtheball.com or the Go Loud app. You can give us 5 out of 5, even if that's not your actual opinion. And please send any questions you have via postcard to Crappy Quiz Quizmaster, Off the Ball Towers, Marconi House, Diggs Lane, Dublin 2. We are back last week after a 2-month hiatus, so naturally we haven't had any posts. So please send some posts in. Love some of this worked out off for next week. Round 1, the boring questions round, never multiple choice. Question 1 for you, Tommy. Can you name the two teams who have won the Rugby World Cup final after extra time?
England.
Correct. And?
England and... South Africa.
Correct. 1995 and 2003.
It's good to be back.
Question 1 for you, Phil. Lionel Messi was the first player to score in 16 consecutive La Liga seasons, but a second player has this week become the second to do so. Can you name him?
Seasons in a row. I thought someone like Joaquin.
No, Sergio Ramos. This week scored for Real Madrid.
Hard luck, Phil.
Question 1 for you, Adrian. We got a bit of a controversy here.
Well, I give you the answer first, and
let's pull the curtain back. You know which sports person this question's going to be about, don't you?
I have an idea.
Take a stab. Go on.
Katie Taylor.
Correct, right.
Adrian, let's clarify. No. Adrian had a tactical Google before the quiz.
No, that's fine. You could do, before the quiz, you can do whatever it is you please.
And fair is fair. Katie Taylor is in action this weekend. Can you name the weight class she is?
No, that's bollocks. Go back to your...
I like this.
If you tell me that's the question that's on the sheet and show it to me, then I will happily take a stab at that.
Tommy,
how would I try and treat the system?
I don't show sheets.
No, come on. Ask me the question that's on the sheet.
You can't predict what's on
Katie
the quiz.
Taylor is back in action this weekend. Can you name the weight class?
No, that's on the sheet. You verified that that's the question.
I can't, because I can't look at the sheet.
Of course you can. It's at the bottom of the page.
I can't.
No,
I might see the next page. I can't look at the sheet.
What weight class is fighting at?
If you tell me that's the question that's on the sheet, I'll take a stab at it.
Yes.
It's not.
Adrian, it backfired. Your tactical
show it to the camera. Show it to the camera. Come on, we can't see it.
No, it's tiny. It's like Times New Roman 11.
No, it's her opponent.
Who's called?
Landetrow. Christina Landetrow.
But no, tell
I
me
think
the,
you got that wrong, answer. Actually. I think if you remember that wrong.
So if you didn't have to land the punch, Landetrow.
I like that bit.
It's Landerdatu.
Yeah.
Landetrow. That's not the same thing.
That's a point. Come on.
It's not a point.
It's super light heavyweight.
That's a point.
Super lightweight.
That is a point.
Super lightweight.
What, for what, man? This is bullshit. That's ridiculous, hon. That is absolutely ridiculous. You're punishing me for doing something you yourself said when he questioned it, you said whatever you do before the quiz you do. But you can't punish me for doing something before the quiz.
You got the answer wrong.
I got the answer 100%.
You got the question wrong as well.
Close to spot on.
No, it's not Landetrow.
That's wrong. You know it's wrong. I know by your hesitancy that you know it's wrong.
Look, I don't like to be harsh on people, but sometimes being harsh is also being nice.
That's a bad decision.
We've got to stand by our principles here.
Leonard Datu is her name.
That's what I said.
Sounds like a transformer.
Christina. I could have just said Christina, but I didn't. I went for it.
Round two. It's 1-0.
That's a point. No, that's...
Round two is the GAA All-Stars round. Playing for your county is all about pride in the jersey, helping your team win, and the ultimate glory of proving to everyone that you're better than your teammates by winning an All-Star. This round will test your knowledge on the GAA All-Stars ahead of tonight's ceremony. Question two for you, Tommy. Wexford have won two All-Stars in this year's Hurling Team of the Year. Can you name the last Wexford man to win one before this year?
Before this year? Let me just clarify for a second. He could have won this year as well.
When did I say that?
Okay, you're not getting any extra detail. Given the extremely stringent
rules. Can I have the question one more time, please?
Who was the last Wexford man to win an All-Star?
This is awful.
So before this year?
In any year that's not 2019.
Surely it was... I feel like I'm being tricked here. Rory Jacob.
No.
It was him, wasn't it?
No.
Conor McDonald?
No. In a long time.
Goalkeeper.
Damien Fitzhenry.
Oh
no, it was my first answer.
Wow.
Question two for you, Phil.
How did I mess that up?
Henry Shefflin has won the most hurling All-Stars, but who has won the most football All-Stars?
Oh, jeez. How easy. It's not a dub.
Yeah, sure. They don't get the All-Stars.
They
just get the All-Irelands.
Pent-up anger.
How did I get Fitzhenry wrong?
A joke to follow up your first one there. Tell me who's got the most football All-Stars.
How long is he getting it?
Yeah.
I don't know, you don't. By time. It's going to be someone like...
Spiky.
Colm Cooper.
No, he's second. Pat Spillane with 9.
It's just a reason for Owen to pick through Kerry's greatness, isn't it? Come on, whatever. Hit me up with some other question that you're going to change on the spot.
Not much picking through is
required. Do you want to change it before I give the answer or afterwards this time?
Question two for Adrian. Name two non-Dublin players who won football All-Stars last year. Any two. Easiest question you'll ever get.
Well, no, the last one was the easiest one I'd ever get and you didn't give it to me.
You got her name wrong.
There probably wasn't that many dubs that got them, although Phil would maybe argue differently. Did Colm Cavanagh get one last year?
He did. Need one more.
Well done.
And Rory Began?
Correct.
Well done.
Good answer. So there was...
So I have 2 points now. Go on, yeah.
The full complete list is Rory Began, Colm Cavanagh, Padraig Hampsey, Carl O'Connell, Ryan McHugh, David Clifford, Conor McManus and Ian Burke.
It's not that easy.
Quite a few non-dubs, yeah?
Not that easy.
Easy if you know the answers, Tommy, you know what I mean?
Yep, 1-0-1 is the score at the moment. Phil is on 0. Round 3 is the players versus the fans round. After Granit Xhaka's brutal showdown with the Arsenal faithful last weekend, this round will test your knowledge on the other time sports people have gotten a tangle with their own fans. Question 3 for you, Tommy. At the 2010 World Cup, an angry Wayne Rooney approached a TV camera and said, "Nice to see your own fans booing you, you football supporters." Who had England just played?
Tunisia?
No, Algeria.
Ah! Oh, you'd nearly give it to him.
On the map.
Question three for you, Phil.
God, that's 2 points behind me now.
In 2002, Real Madrid's Luis Figo was targeted by Barcelona fans who ended up throwing a pig's head at him at the Nou Camp. The Barcelona manager at the time came out and said, Figo provoked the fans. He walked over to the corner really slowly, picked up the bottle slowly, went back to the corner, and all this consciously and deliberately without the referee doing anything to stop it. Can you name that manager?
Was it Louis van Gaal?
Correct. Phil is up to one. It's one all. Adrian, go ahead. Paddy O'Shea famously called Kerry the roughest type of effing animals in a newspaper
interview. Marty Morrissey in Dubai.
No.
It wasn't Dubai either. It was South Africa.
South Africa was the answer.
Oh, shit. Was that the actual question?
Yeah, South Africa was the answer.
I would have said Dubai anyway, so...
The answer was, where did Marty Morrissey chat to Paddy O'Shea after?
They were on, was it not?
I jumped the gun away.
Was he on an All-Stars trip or something? Was that the... Or was he, no, he was just on holidays.
He was just on holidays.
And Marty was also just on holidays. Is that
well,
right about
Paddy was on the team holiday. Marty was just on holidays.
Does he go to the same... he picks his destination by wherever the All-Ireland team are going that year.
Is that right?
I mean, I have no idea. Oh. I'm just asking. That was a question.
I just think he's...
South Africa is a lovely holiday destination on its own merits, I think, Adrian. But we're all. Congratulations to everybody so far. Round four.
I should be two.
At least we're all on the board, lads.
Yeah. I should be two.
This is a tight game.
It's a taking part that counts.
Grind this one out, like, you know?
I really don't like the new format of the rapid fire annual score.
Yeah, just try and get yourself in the lead, Tommy, and then maybe you can use it.
And try and get in before Phil, because he's a machine.
It's game over then.
Yeah, he's a milkman. Round four is the fun free magic number round. Contestants get 3 points for getting the number exactly right. If no one manages that, the nearest contestant who doesn't go bust gets 2 points. The second closest gets one. Again, I'm going to say that we can only accept the answer that's written on your paper. I'm also going to have to ask for your pens once the music ends. So if you don't mind, give us the following number. The number of All-Star Awards won by Henry Shefflin during his Kilkenny playing career. Plus the number of PGA Tour wins now notched by Tiger Woods. Plus the number of kilometres to the nearest kilometre in a marathon. Plus the number of total goals, including penalties, scored at Anfield on Wednesday night. Your 30 seconds expires when Sinatra sings Bright Shiny Beats. So how many All-Stars does Henry Shefflin have? That's your first one. Added to that, the number of PGA Tour wins by Tiger Woods after his win in Japan last weekend. The number of kilometres in a marathon to the nearest kilometre. And the number of goals scored at Anfield on Wednesday, including in the penalty shootout. Ooh. Time's almost up. And down.
So that was a good round.
Yeah, thank you very much. Tommy?
89.
150. Oh, no.
93.
154 is the correct answer.
Oh, no.
Phil gets the 2 points.
I get a point.
And Adrian gets the 1 point.
154?
Let's go through this.
Did I mess up a tiger? Tiger obviously is 80, is it?
Got a massive number, yeah.
I wasn't sure. I put 28.
Tiger's got 82 PGA Tour wins.
Oh, my God.
I didn't count Everson as PGA Tour wins.
The number of All-Stars that Shefflin has?
10.
11. The number of kilometres in a marathon?
42.
Yeah.
And the number of goals in Anfield?
19.
So that'll give you a grand total of 154. Tommy, you're on 1 point. Adrian, you're on 2 points. And Phil, you're on 3 points.
I got them all wrong apart from the Tiger. Yeah. Like I was under and over in a few of them. So I kind of balanced out.
Right, we're on to the final. Our winner tonight will be decided in the round that separates the men from the boys, the Henry Shefflins from the Henry VIII.
Ultimately, it's all done. Finished.
It's a no team in particular, ridiculously easy rapid fire round. The score you get in this round will be added to your score in a previous round. There will be 40 seconds for everyone to answer from the same set of questions. We're going to start with the person with the highest number of points, then onto the person in second, and then onto the person in last. If you get a question correct, I'll ask you another question and keep asking you questions until you get one wrong. And once you get a question wrong, I'll move on to the next person. And your correct answer also means the deduction of 1 point. Phil, you ready?
Yeah.
I'm Pat Mustard.
3, 2, 1.
Your time starts with an Alan Quinlan huge.
I think it was huge for Japan, you know. Huge.
Who scored the most tries in 2007 when South Africa last won the World Cup?
Brian Habana.
Correct. Where will the 2023 Rugby World Cup take place?
He's gone.
France. How many goals did Leicester concede against Southampton last week, Adrian?
Nine.
None. Kawhi Leonard plays for which NBA franchise? Kawhi Leonard plays for which NBA franchise, Tommy?
Toronto.
No, Clippers. Name the Springboks captain, Phil. He's gone!
Khaleesi. In which World Cup did Ireland not lose a quarter final, Adrian, in rugby? Last not lose a quarter final?
2011.
No, 2007. Partizan Belgrade is a club in which country, Tommy?
Serbia.
Correct. Name the Shamrock Rovers manager.
Stephen Bradley.
Correct. Which team won baseball's World Series on Wednesday night?
The Open.
Time's up. One more. Still.
Is this
the win? No, is this
what
the win?
What club does Cheslin Colby play for?
Oh. How long is he getting, lads? Is he getting 3 seconds?
He's a cheatist.
No, it's Toulouse.
Toulouse.
Which means...
Do I win?
Adrian is on zero.
True.
Tommy went back to one.
What?
Phil? Phil also went back to one as a result of his incorrect answer.
So it's a three-way tie.
Which means it is a three-way tie.
Dude, if you got the Katie Taylor question right, you'd be in the mix here.
Oh, sorry. No, we're not in.
Oh, here, I should be reinstated. He makes an excellent point. I should be reinstated.
Oh, my God, Tommy.
I should be put back in here. Ultimately, that question was right, and ultimately, I should be put back in.
Okay, tie break.
It actually gets funnier the more you say it.
I know.
Phil, Tommy. We tossed the coin. Phil, Tommy. Tommy won the coin toss. So, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go a second.
How many Ireland caps does Steve Finnan have, Phil?
I'm going to say 38.
38, Tommy?
Over.
Correct. 53.
Get in there.
Tommy Rooney is the winner. And there's another crappy quiz. Have a happy Halloween, everyone.
I thought he was lost there. Proper comeback, boys.
Properly shafted there.
Hey, look, Phil.
I should have been in the mix.
You've lost your spark.
I should have been in that three-way tie. Yeah.
You were never in the mix.
I should have been. What would we have done if it was a three-way split?
I don't know.
Nobody even knows. There's no reason.
There's no point, really. But thank you for taking part, and congratulations to
Ultimately,
Tommy.
Just happy to be here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be...
Come on, will I say the line? Ultimately. Yeah, are you happy now?
Ultimately.
Where do we go from here?
Where do we go from here? Something brilliant is up next in the radio, and we're back next week on youtube.com/offtheball.
It's a bit self-serving, I think, to be honest, Richie. I mean, like when you're a professional footballer, Richie, you don't be lauded every week.
You don't be lauded every week, but you shouldn't have to put up with people wishing that your kid gets cancer and saying, kill your wife.
Of course not. I mean, nobody likes that. But I think when you're a professional footballer, you will get louts who will do that. But it doesn't give you a license either, Richie, to be walking off and take your jersey off and tell the supporters to fuck off. It doesn't give you a license to do that, right? You can walk off the pitch with your own dignity and be very annoyed about it and make the statement afterwards that it's very cruel what people do. But what he actually did as a professional footballer, and who was he telling to F off? I mean, there was 50, 60,000 people in the ground. And he's, and what people will tell you too, look, this is your living. This is our entertainment. This is what we do. I'm not saying it's right for anybody to do abusive things. Unfortunately, that's the way of the world today with the social media, as you know. He's not the only one that gets that. Everybody apparently gets that abuse, no matter what you're doing. But it would be from the minority of people. But if you're a professional footballer and he was taken off the pitch and there was nobody, when he was first going off, having a go at him.
9:32. Phil Egan, good morning to you.
How are you doing?
You having that hot take?
On Granit Xhaka?
Yeah.
He's not a very good player. And when he was appointed captain, you kind of knew it wasn't going to go well. Doesn't deserve the abuse. But he shouldn't be in the Arsenal team.
His teammates chose him as captain.
Yeah. That worries me for Arsenal. And I think better. I remember when it came up, I said Guendouzi would be a better option. Hector Bellerin was the captain in the League Cup game the other night. Mm. So you'd wonder if he's got, like, what his future holds what the future holds for Xhaka at Arsenal. Would he just think, I don't need this anymore? And if they got decent money, like, he could go back to the Bundesliga or something like that.
Jesus, Phil. I've never heard such a dismissive insult delivered with such casualness.
No, but like,
go back to the Bundesliga, wherever you came from.
The way they play there suits him. It's a little bit of a slower pace.
Right. Sounded like you're saying it's a shite league and he'd be better.
Not at all, no. It's a great league. But I just think he is, when I saw him playing for Mönchengladbach, he was a lot more impressive, whereas sometimes you just see him kind of walking around.
Yeah.
But, he hasn't been very good for Arsenal.
So. Arsenal fan in residence.
Yeah, like I kind of agree with a lot of what Phil said there. It's
their abuse isn't deserved. I think it's kind of poor in the first place, to be honest. Even Machado is saying there, I kind of disagree with that, to be honest with you. I'm not sure if he got the order of events correct there. Like, I'm not sure did the jeering actually come as a result of what Xhaka did. I'm pretty sure what Xhaka did came as a result of the jeering, to be honest.
And yeah.
It's the, like, I don't know, it's, I don't think it reflects very well. And I think the fact that the Arsenal fans, or the Arsenal players rather, chose him would say to the fans, actually, get behind this guy. We kind of know what we're doing. We know him better than you do. Mm. And he's a great leader in the dressing room. I feel sorry for him this week.
Yeah, like he might, like, there's got to be something to him that he keeps getting the captain's armband. He's the captain of Switzerland.
Arsenal reminds me of Brexit, that you thought under the previous regime it couldn't get any worse, and then the new guy comes in and you're like, well, he's going to tidy this thing up and double jig time, and it's going to put a nice shine on it, and everything's going to be absolutely brilliant, and everything will get done. And then suddenly you realise it's as equal a shit show as it was under the previous regime.
Yeah, was it the Fulham game?
Better in Europe, though, so that flies in the face of your Brexit argument.
Brexit or... Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Fulham last season away when they scored that great goal and the Arsenal fans were singing, we've got our Arsenal back.
Yeah.
But...
well, a bit premature.
Yeah, like, it was never going to be a quick fix. So they've got a lot of attacking talent, but they're hopeless at the back.
Mm.
Bernd Leno is probably the most... hardly work goalkeeper in.
Could have Jay Leno in there and he'd be grand, is what you're saying.
So,
no, the opposite. Is installing Jose Mourinho, to use your analogy, installing Nigel Farage as Prime Minister?
Like a guy who, yeah, there's a lot of talk and bluster, and does he really deliver? Well, he's probably delivered, and both of those have delivered. Are you saying this in a positive sense, or are you
just trying to both of them delivered your analogy?
Both of them delivered. What they set out to deliver.
If you're going to drop the B word in the studio, Adrian, you better be prepared to follow through to its final conclusion.
It depends on which Jose Mourinho you're talking about, because his United version is a bit of a Theresa May.
The 2019 version, yeah.
Because Farage is, like, Farage got out of there. You see, he did it Zidane before Zidane came back. He went in, pulled off this unbelievable job, and got out of Dodge. Like, went on a tour of the US, the exact same thing as Zidane did. Went over and sort of filled his boots, you know, enjoyed himself. Met up with Donald Trump, and then suddenly the mistake he made was getting back in again for both of them.
Do you think we've taken this analogy a bit too far?
No, I think it's 100% on track. Yeah. A bit like Brexit.
I agree.
Phil.
New Zealand and Wales underway in Tokyo in the bronze medal match at the Rugby World Cup. Half an hour gone. New Zealand lead 14-10. Joe Moody and Beauden Barrett with the tries for the All Blacks. They were 14-0 up after 13 minutes. Kind of feared for the Welsh, but Halam Amas replied with a try for Wales. Rhys Patchell kicked the conversion and has since knocked over a penalty as well. Back-to-back rounds of 67 of Rory McIlroy well in the mix at the halfway stage of the World Golf Championship HSBC Champions event in Shanghai. Former world number one Eagle the last to finish up on 10 under, leaving him one behind leader Matt Fitzpatrick. Shane Lowry is level par. Plenty of speculation mounting that Jim Gavin will stay on as Dublin manager next season. Obviously guided the Dubs to the historic 5-in-a-row in September with the win over Kerry in a replay. Dublin chairman Sean Shanley quoted in this morning's Irish Independent saying that Jim Gavin is inquiring and talking about fixtures for the league, and Shanley believes he's definitely going to stay on. Brian Lowen's the new manager of the Clare Senior Hurlers. The former All-Ireland winner with the banner has been given a 2-year term with the option of a third year. Big game in Ballybuffet tonight. It's for a place in next season's top flight in the SSE Airtricity League. Drogheda United are 1-0 up on Finn Harps going into the second leg of that playoff. Gets underway at 7:45. And huge weekend for Katie Taylor. She's due to weigh in later on today ahead of topping the bill in Manchester tomorrow. Who's she fighting, Adrian?
Linda Trow? Is that what it, that was a mistake? How I mistakenly pronounced it?
She's fighting Christina Linardatu for the WBO super lightweight title. It's the super lightweight division. Katie Taylor obviously unified the lightweight division. So looking to become the first Irish boxer since Carl Frampton to become a two-weight world champion, and Steve Collins the only other Irish boxer to win two weights. And Tyson Fury still lineal heavyweight champion after winning against Braun Strowman in the Crown Jewel match in WWE.
Closely contested.
Yeah, it was
nobody good. Really, you couldn't have predicted the outcome, sort of thing.
Certainly not. I mean,
what was his finishing move?
Just
straight arm, was it? Did I see that? He out of the ring.
I saw little snippets of it where he was on the
straight out of the ring. It doesn't like end the contest in WWE. No. That's just the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, which Fury be very effective in the Royal Rumble. Ben Smith has scored a try for New Zealand, 19-10, with the conversion to come, 32 minutes gone there. In actual sport, well, actually, to be fair, I mean, there's an equivalence here with what we're talking about. Brian Lowen's appointment in Clare obviously was one of the big stories this morning. You can check out John Duggan, who has strong Clare roots, has got a piece up on offtheball.com right now. Brian Lowen has the leadership qualities to revive Clare, says John, so go and check that out up there. That is it from us on OTB AM this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. It's the Sports Breakfast Show from Off The Ball. Be back on Monday morning, of course, and do stay tuned to the Off The Ball channels and OTB Sports Radio throughout the day. Golf Weekly live, after lunch today. It says here in front of me, so I guess that's what's happening. If you've missed anything from OTB AM this morning, no, it's not, is it? It was yesterday, is that what you're saying? Golf Weekly's not live. Not live today. It ain't live today, but you can catch it next week. Thanks, Tommy. Paddy Power Half Hour will be winging its way to you at about midday today. You'll have Friday Night Racing as well, with all the usual hosts at 3 o'clock. And if you missed anything from OTB AM this morning, the problem with Irish rugby and the Rugby World Cup final preview with Andy Dunn, the sports pages, the Off The Ball stars, plenty more besides. You can check the podcast back on offtheball.com /podcast or on the Go Loud app. You can watch it back on our YouTube channel and subscribe as well. Off The Ball live tonight from 7, Friday Night Racing, rugby, much, much more. OTB AM back Monday morning from 7:30. Phil, Owen.
Cheerio.
Cheerio. Enjoy your collective weekends. Thank you. Thanks for joining us this morning. Good morning.
That was an Off The Ball Podcast Network presentation.